Alright, so who's all here? We have Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And Gail.
Gail?
Yeah.
Katie.
Chad? Kelly? Peter? Peter's not coming tonight because he's got a little sore throat.
Okay.
He's holding space in the back room. we have the new moon in Gemini at 0 degrees Gemini, 20 minutes of arc. Gemini in general is a sign of communication, but it goes beyond that. Communication is just one expression of it. It's the sign of exchange. So any idea of any concept of exchange, whether you're trading something, that's why Gemini is governed by Mercury. Mercantile, Mr. Mercantile, merchants. Same words, you know, for trading stuff. And that's why Mercury's also the god of thieves. Because that's basically what merchants are doing. Like, I'll buy low over here and come over here and you won't know about it and I'll trick you and sell it high. And you won't have to go get it. So they're doing a service, but still it's very like, because how much are they marking it up? So we got Gemini, so there's a sense of the trickster archetype here. So there's tricky stuff going on. And it turns out it starts in the solar eclipse started in South China and going to America. And my friend Peter said that some guy from China wanted asylum with the embassy or whatever. I wanted to leave China. They're like, we're going to hurt your family if you try to escape China. And then he like got out anyway. He was blind, like a blind Chinese man. Came to America under this solar eclipse last night in the balsamic phase of escaping. I was like, that's an interesting story. I like to see what stories play out in the media based on what's going on in China. Because you can look at the headlines of any day. Just go to like MSNBC.com or one of these news stations and look at the headlines. And then look at the chart and go, oh. It's like, duh. anyway, we're going to look at this chart. I got it set for Washington, D.C. That's what the houses are for. Mainly because since we live in this country, it's good to know like what's going on a national scale. The fact that the new moon's in the 7th house over Washington at the moment when it got exactly conjunct means that, you know, we're just... this 7th house has to do with cooperation and legalities and balance and harmony and relationships. So on an international level, you could say mundane astrology, which is world astrology, you could say mundo, you could say, hey, this new moon is telling America to plan some intense new beginnings in their international relations so that 6 months from now they could come to a place of flowering. You know? So that's how that works, like international terms. And the south node there, nearby, that's why it's an eclipse. So you can see the south node right here. Anytime you have a south node, anytime you have a new moon like this, or a full moon when the moon's over here, along this axis of the nodes, within 18 degrees, or 12.5 degrees for a full moon, you're going to have an eclipse. So full moons are lunar eclipses, new moons are solar eclipses. But we have a solar eclipse today. So the way I say it is that this new beginning that you're forming, the balsamic phase coming in, giving it a spiritual intent, bringing it into thought and feeling, what do you think about it, what do you feel about it, how do you want to work this new intention into the house it's falling in, tonight we're looking at everybody's houses, and then you take it into physical action the day after the new moon, you do something about it. Even if it's just a lament that you're so far away from where you intend to be, that you're just paying attention to that. The universe says, you're limiting. Okay. At least you're focused in the right direction now. You know what you want, even if it's a limit. You know? So sometimes sadness is our best indicator. Or if you're angry about something, I haven't been to the gym in 6 months. I'm pissed off. I'm going to the gym. You know, if it's like a new moon in your first house. Because the new moon that happens in the first house right here, that's the most important new moon of the year because it's the new beginning of you and your body. First house body. So I always say that's your astrological new year. Your rising sign determines your January 1st, not the calendar. In other words, if you want to start a workout program and you start on January 1st, and let's say your rising sign is Aquarius, which comes, you know, a month later, you're like a month early. If you start in January, you're like, you're still in your letting go, release spiritual, go inward phase. Like, what are you doing working out at the gym? You know? You're going to feel, no wonder you didn't stick to your resolutions. Your resolution isn't in the right timing, you know. So every time has power because time has archetypal quality. And if you have archetypal quality and you're aligned with it, it's like surfing. Whereas like you're just in the flow, you know. Everybody's like, wow, your life's amazing. You're in the flow. And but if you're like you don't know about the cycle and you're resisting it, it kind of gets crazy. See chart open.
I don't.
you want a pen?
You do an extra pen. Mine just died.
A writer?
I get a pen as well.
Yeah.
Can I get paper, Andrew?
Yeah. We got paper, we got pens, we got
You know, it's getting good when people ask you for pens. We're like, let's write this book down. Paper, pens.
Thanks.
Let's see. Oh, we're going to grab Andrew's chair here. What you got? Where did I put you under, Andrew? I don't remember. Let's just re-put you. And then we'll... new. So we got Andrew. What's your last name?
Erickson.
Eric. C.K.?
C.K., yes.
All right. Date of birth?
September 14th.
September 14th,
yes.
1989. So this is what every astrologer does when they get a reading, an order for a chart, or some client comes. They sit there and put this date in, and they go, I wonder what this person's like. Time?
11:29 p.m. And I was in San Diego.
San Diego. Cat. Okay, so we have a male. He could be an event. We have. So, here we got Andrew's chart. Now notice, the Gemini moon, just what I was saying, the Gemini moon is falling in his 12th house. Because it's right there. See? Because it's 1 degree. Now, spiritually and archetypally, it's in your rising sign. So in terms of a whole sign chart, this would be your new moon in the first house. But experientially, in the emotional, mental, and physical realms, it's still a 12th house moon for you.
Okay.
So, I like to think of the whole sign chart, like the ancients saw Gemini as the whole first house. That's the whole first house. So, but there's an experiential difference between when the planet has not risen and risen, you know. So in terms of visual astrology, there's a big difference, you know. So any planet in this sector rising in the east, so it's very connected to the inner realms, the spiritual realms. Like when the moon, the ancients thought of it as a place of troubles and misery and illusion and deception, because when planets rose and they got magnified, like the moon's all big, they thought the planets weren't being true to themselves. That's how they interpret it. And they're like, hey, they're walking in illusion. So they called this the house of the evil daimon, like the evil guardian spirit. And then the 11th was like the good guardian spirit. They're like, they're back to normal over here. But anyway, 12th house does have, in my experience, a connection to illusion. People that have strong 12th house are like filmmakers, poets, musicians, dreamers, they're visionary artists. So the fact that the new moon's happening in there means that for Andrew, in 6 months, there's going to be a full moon in there. When the sun gets over here in Sag, it'll shine a full moon over there. So for him, it is a new moon in 12th house, and you can look at that quite easily with a bi-wheel right there. So you can see that the new moon is right here. 0 degrees. The moon's already at 1 degree. This moon moves 1 degree every 2 hours. So it eclipses 2 hours ago. So it's sitting right there, that first degree. The planet, the program could even put them all packed together tight enough, you know, because they're all like right there. Well, Jupiter's at 24 Taurus. So even Jupiter's back here. Mercury's at 22 Taurus. So really, they're all over there. Or 22 Taurus would be there. 24 would be there. Yeah. So they're all there. But the new moon is saying, Andrew, plant a new seed, a new beginning in the 12th house of spiritual vision and integration. So it's a great spiritual retreat time. When a new moon's in the 12th house, it's like, go inward, meditate, get right with God, go find your muse, you know. So it's a great, like, let's go on a retreat.
Yeah.
And it's great for spiritual searching, knowledge, just attuning yourself to divine love. Whereas if it's the 6th house, it'd be time to, like, clean the house or something. The 6th house is all about, like, discernment, what is right, what is wrong. It's very Virgo, you know. Let's go do a yoga class. But like, the new moon in the 12th house is all about like, spiritual enlightenment. Are you enlightened yet? Maybe something will happen. So, because tomorrow, look at this, 1 day later, see, like, if we back this up, like 3 days ago, 1, 2, 3, see how the moon was coming in just like on my chart here? See, I moved it back 3 days, watch, 1, 2, 3. Now the moon's there today. So during the last 3.5 days, Andrew should have been going like, okay, universe, what do you want out of me in terms of my experience of spirituality, integration, mythic appreciation, imagination, vision, escapism.
That's 12.
Yeah? Does that resonate here?
Yeah.
Okay, because now today is the day of bringing it into thought and feeling.
Yeah.
What is my mental strategy? What do I feel about this intention that sort of rose out of the darkness and into balsamic fit? And then tomorrow, let's just... One, two... Wait. Where's... Yeah. So here's today. Tomorrow, the moon will be 13 degrees in the sun, see? So tomorrow, we usually don't see it because the mountain's in the way. But the moon's out there with a little crescent shining. Today, it's a new moon. But yeah, because when the sun goes down, it'll be like on the other side like that. You know, when the sun's over there going down, the moon is just above it. Just above it, yeah. Just a little crescent. So tomorrow, if you start taking action, really each phase of the lunation cycle, this is the lunation cycle. So each phase, there's the new moon phase. This is called the crescent moon phase, from creo to create. Things are being created. That's why I say, plant your plants under the waxing moon. The energies of the world are rising. Yeah. This here is the waxing quarter. So the waxing phase. This here is the gibbous phase, which is an astronomical term. It means almost full, but not full yet. And then this here is the full moon phase, obviously. So really, each phase is 3.5 days. And you can feel these phases, too, when you tune yourself to them. And the cool thing is, on the progress chart, when you look at your progress sum, it takes 1 degree or 1 year to go through 1 degree. Your progress sun is moving 1 degree each year of your life. That's called the progress sun. The progress moon goes 1 degree each month of your life. And so it goes around in like 30 years and it catches up to the sun every 30 years. And so every 3.5 years, because 3.5 days in the daily cycle, 3.5 days you can see the phase. There it is. But in the progression, that's 3.5 years. So if you go back in your life and you divide it into these little 3.5 year segments, and then you go, what happened here? What happened here? What happened here? It perfectly lines with the meanings of all these things. So during the balsamic phase, those 3.5 years are when people are like going through death and rebirth and letting go of everything and release and transformation. And why do I want to kill myself? I feel like I'm dying. And then I am dying. Like spiritually, you're going through soul, death, and rebirth. And at the new moon, guess what? You'll start a whole new life. It's funny, I went into this phase, because people go in these phases at different times in their life, right? Because you could be like having the sun here when you were born and the moon there, and that phase came around at, say, when you were like 10. But if you started born in that phase, it wouldn't come around to like 30, you know? So for me, I hit that phase when I was in high school in 11th grade. So I was like 4.0, captain of the football team, totally like jamming in Western world civilization terms. Scholarships to any college, and I went into a balsamic phase, and I was like, oh my God, I was like, I just want to die. This is like so lame in society. I just wanted to go inward and have a rebirth, and that was the time of me like having deep spiritual, metaphysical insights. I changed my major from physics to the physics of consciousness in college. You know, started like, I remember talking to football coaches who were trying to recruit me, and they were like, yeah, we have a great program, blah, blah, blah. I was like, do you have a mountain nearby? Because I just want to sit on it. And meditate. And they're like, what? And they're like, yeah. So it's good that I stayed in Boulder. I went to the Air Force Academy. Because I thought, hey, if the Air Force knows the inside out about, like, aliens and, like, you know, like, they will know. If I infiltrate from within, it'll be great. And then I got there, and I was like, this is just stupid. So they're, like, planning the invasion of Iraq in 1989. I'm like... The war didn't break out until 1991. They had a strategy game the size of like this whole apartment. They were already running simulations, and I was being trained to be part of this. I was like, nope. So I dropped out and came back to CU and started playing football. The thing is I went into this dark moon phase, and out of that phase came my new moon phase once in 30 years, and bam, I ended up down in Key West, Florida by the sea, doing astrology charts from tourists around the world. And wrote my first book. Celestial Renaissance. So that's me coming out of my balsamic phase right there. With the hair and all.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was down in Key West. I have a mango tree behind me. I was like, give me some mangoes. Right off the tree. But anyway, so yeah, so these are the phases. The gibbous, the full. This is the disseminating phase. Disseminating means it's time to teach your truth. Einstein was born under the disseminating phase. His sun, moon, angle was here. He came to disseminate. You know? So whatever phase you were born under, you're here to do. Like, I was born in the waxing moon phase, which is about, like, creating a structure to contain the spiritual vision that's been deposited in your soul. I'm like, oh, I could do that. You know? And, of course, this is the waning phase of the lunation cycle. The waning quarter is the waxing quarter. Calendars, they call this the first quarter and last quarter. I like this waxing and waning because it's got that yin-yang thing. The yang versus the yin. Because this is all about action in the world. Build the structure. And this is like, what the hell does it mean? What is this thing we got here? It's a building. Like, so this is when people have breakdowns in consciousness. Things start to come apart right here. This is when I start to come apart, you know? Because I was like, you know, this was 11th grade. I was like, about 8th grade. Yeah, this is when I started reading about ancient pyramids and Egypt and doing pyramid meditations and going, like, listening to The Cure and wondering about deep... I just started coming apart societally at my waning quarter phase. Right? But anyway, and then, of course, the balsamic phase. The balsam of Mecca comes in and you get perfumed. But anyway, so you notice, he's having a new moon. He's planting a seed in 7 days from now. We already did one day. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So you notice, in 7 days, 7 1/4, that moon's going to be there squaring that sun. See, moon to sun square? So that's like the universe knocking in the head saying, how's it going? Are you out of the gate? Like, how are you doing? It's like running a race. You get ready, you come out of the blocks, but you get around that first corner, and you're like, well, I'm doing good. But that guy's way ahead of me. I better speed up. You know, it's like learning how to cope with the new intention that's been planted. But if you plant this for months, watch the sun, which is the circle with a dot, symbolizing spiritual point of experience. You get an experience point for being in the great circle of spirit. but anyway, D&D joke. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, so now we see that the sun here, 6 months from now, is going to be over here. And look where the moon is, over there. We moved it ahead a week, so it's really 6 months and a week later. But let me move this. Okay, there you can see it right there. I'll get it to the exact degree here. Boom, boom, boom. I guess we're going to go back. Boom, boom. Just get that to 7, 6 now. The sun lost a degree there. Okay, so there's the moon at 6 in Gemini. And there's the sun at 6 Sagittarius. And this is on November 28th. So everybody listening, new moon, what's happening in this solar eclipse? It's 3 times more important than the average lunation because it's an eclipse. And eclipses intensify things. I always think that new soul groups are coming in when the eclipse happens. Because the eclipse is happening along the nodal axis, which is the evolutionary path of the soul. So I think for 6 months, you were saying, a new craft's coming in. You know, let's go harvest over here. We're going to save the elders for the end. But all these new people start coming in with a new soul agenda. And they're like, ooh, ooh, ooh. I mean, they're babies to start out. But as they grow, you know, they get into the flow of things. They start to actualize their nodal stuff. The spiritual axis of the soul. Because, because basically the nodes are created by the sun and moon path. Like when you're sitting here looking out, hey, at the sky, the sun's path goes by. The moon's path is like 5 degrees tilt to that. So where they meet on either side, you have this situation, the moon's going up above the earth, and then it's meeting over here on the other side. Say it right there. And then it's coming around. The moon goes below and then comes up above. And so these points are the nodes. So the moon is going up above the sun's path. That's the north node. That's why they call it the ascending node. And then the south node is the point at the bottom. So that's what these nodes are. And that's why eclipses happen, because the sun and moon, when they get close to these nodes within 18 degrees, they're kind of aligned with each other, right? These points. So the disks can get in the way of each other. You know? That's how it happens. A lunar eclipse is the moon is over here and the earth gets in the way. So the sun is shining and the earth gets in the way and shadows the moon. The moon turns blood red and everybody's like, ah! The ancients thought eclipses were so important because for them, astrology wasn't about, like, how am I doing in my life? They didn't have this whole modern focus on me and my direction in life. Their whole focus was like, how is the king doing? Because if the king fails, we're all dead. And so when an eclipse happened, and it was like, you know, the sun, the moon, the king and the queen of the heavens were doing this eclipse thing, and this darkness came over the earth. They were like, it happened like in a critical place, in the nation's chart, the king's chart. They were like, ah! They were like, this is intense. Something's going Something big, a big change is happening.
Yeah. So for all of us, a big change is happening. And 6 months later, notice, the full moon will be in your 12th house. Which basically means like, hey, you ask under that full moon, you do a full moon meditation and say, how am I doing based on the seeds I planted in the 12th house of spiritual vision, the life of the imagination, my spiritual past, my connection with the divine, integration, visionary arts, all the 12th house Piscean sort of themes, you know? And and then you'll be like, you'll either get a vision, how to take it higher to the next level, or if you've gotten off track and haven't weeded the garden or watered the garden of this spiritual retreat that you're on right now, then you'll get a vision of like, this is how I got off track. This is how you get back on track. And every year you get a new flow, a new cycle. So let's do some rounds. All right, let's go around the circle. So you're Gail?
Yeah.
Night chart. New.
It's G-A-I-L.
Okay.
Cool. It's October 6th, 87.
October 6th, 1987. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, what is your lesson?
Oh, I'm Margolis. M-A-R-G-O-L-I-S.
Oh, that has... What does that mean?
I don't know.
Margolis. You see Mars right up front. Mars. Mm. Mar. You never see Mar. I'm like, Mar. I wonder why we get married. Because Mary starts with Mar, and that's like the god of war. Like, we should get Venus-aged.
Yeah.
Let's get Venus-aged.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So October 6th, 1987. Time?
4:20 p.m.
4:20 p.m. Did you rectify that?
Yeah.
Place?
Tel Aviv.
Tel Aviv. Oh, cool. Israel?
Yeah.
Nice. What brought you here? What brought you to these parts?
Family. Oh. I was really young.
Oh, cool.
We moved here, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's look at the natal chart first. Okay, so check it out. She's got Pisces rising, so she walks the path of the mystic, the poet, the dreamer. Mm-hmm. Dreamy eyes, dreamy face. Even the mouth looks like kind of a little fish. You know? Anyway, your moon's in Aries, you're like, don't call me a fish. So that Aries moon is saying, I have the soul of the warrior, but having the moon in the first house means that you're also, the way your personality works is that you're very emotional and nurturing and contemplative and reflective. Because it's the great mother. So that's what people don't understand. When the moon's in the first house, it's like having Cancer rising. A Cancer rising protector, healer, nurturer overlay to whatever sign is actually rising, Pisces. So you're like the mystic, the protector, and the warrior. You know, Aries is like the pioneer, too. You're like, you're a trailblazer. You start something new. And, look at this T-cross up in here. Okay, anyway, I can see why your name has Mar in it. You know, because you got Moon in Aries, the sign of Mars, warrior. Mm-hmm. And then you got this intense opposition to Mars over here in the seventh house of love. So it's like, you're like, raw, when it comes to love, I'm here to fight. And do something new and have a pioneering experience. Mm-hmm. Around the issues of Virgo discernment and anal retentive ability to pick my partner apart and see what the faults are. Because you got Virgo rising, you're like, you're like a Zen master when it comes to relationships. Which is good, as long as you don't, like, you know, try to fix everybody and repair everybody.
Yeah.
You're this tremendous healing gift, but at the same time, you're like a Libra sun. So the sun in the seventh house means that your path of self-realization and spiritual illumination is unfolding in the field of cooperation and intimacy. Mm-hmm. So it's like your path, it's not a do-it-yourself lifetime for the sun on this side of the chart, especially in the seventh house. It's like we have to form cooperatives with others. Mm-hmm. And with Mars and Virgo in the seventh house, it's like when we get there, we're going to stick them with a spear of our intellect. Find out how to make them better, you know? Because you're like the Zen master when you got Mars and Virgo. So Mars and Virgo tends to do that. And then this intense T-squareness here. I mean, look at this. This is a grand square, actually. You've got a T-square to Chiron down here at the bottom in the fourth house of healing family issues. Yeah. Around communication. So, and then you get this opposition up here to Uranus. Uranus is conjunct the midheaven. You'd be an amazing astrologer or doing anything involving metaphysics, scientific breakthroughs.
I want to.
Because you have Uranus in the 10th house, so you have the planet of astrology right there on the midheaven, 23, 24, 1 degree off the midheaven.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
On the ninth house side, bringing that philosophy in. Mm-hmm. So having that Uranus up there at the top of the chart saying, like, I can't work in regular 9-to-5 schedules. I go crazy. Because Uranus is like, I need to do something different and unique and use my intuition every day. I have the same thing. That's why I have. Because when you have Uranus at the midnight, that's what my teacher saw when I was 14. He's like, Kelly, you have a grand air trine. Remember the pain? You have a grand air trine to Uranus, planet of astrology, the house of career. Bless you, you're a great teacher. Science rising. Enthusiasm just pours out of you. Plus, you like to talk. You can't shut up. I'm like, no. Let's talk about astrology. Let's be enthusiastic. So, when you're aligned with your rhythms, you're just in line with your rhythms. So, let's look at your new moon where it's falling, since we're doing that tonight. That's the focus. This is our round table chart. We're looking at round zodiacs with new moons. And, you know, the zodiac was developed, you know, by the Babylonians way back when. And they had a focus where, you know, because in 5000 BC, which was the age of Gemini, this sign, you know, you got the Aries age for 2160 years. That was the age of conquest and the go on the great, be the hero of your culture and go on the quest for the golden fleece and attain immortality. That was like their whole Christ mythos. And then Jesus came out of the desert and said, no, love your enemies. Now, string this guy up. Because Pisces is about universal love, his service to others, very good. And Aries is about, like, no, let's have conquest and warriors who do art and have temples of beauty. And then the Taurus age was all like, you know, if Taurus is governed by Venus, copper is this, Venus is almost, it's the Bronze Age, this is the Iron Age. But Gemini was the age of when, in 5000 BC, which had been right smack in the middle of Gemini, that's when writing and the wheel were invented. People are like, we're going to roll around and we're going to communicate. And we're still doing it, you know? People, every car commercial you see, every commercial about cars, they're still trying to get you to roll around. And beer was invented then, too. So you got beer commercials, car commercials, still trying to sell stuff from since 5000 BC. But anyway, this Gemini here is in your third house. So this new moon is in your third house, which is the house of learning and reading and writing and speaking and just networking and finding solutions. So you're planting seeds in the field of learning. This is my favorite new moon of the year. So I'm a writer, moon in Gemini, I'm biased. And the new moon in the third house, because why? It's a new beginning in the field of writing. Let's go. So you're, and it's not just writing, it's reading, learning, integrating your knowledge. I call it, in the instinctual realm of the body, the third house has to do with exchange. What are you trading? What are you learning? What are, you know, because words are just exchanging ideas through words, you know. So this is the third house. So yeah, you're planting strong seeds in the mind, the field of perception and exchange. And so 6 months later, when that, what's the date? November 28th?
Yeah.
Yeah. When November 28th rolls around, there'll be a full moon in there. You'll be like, oh my God, everything I've been learning in 6 months, it's all coming together in a grand orchestra of amazement in my brain. So that's really cool. And of course, that's perfect timing. Just look, the sun will be up here. And where's the moon going to go? It's going to catch the sun in the house of career and say, how'd you like a new calling in life? You know, so these things like flow into each other, not isolated incidents. And I know Chaz over there going like, Kelly, Uranus is on her moon. Talk about that.
No, because 6 months ago, I had something similar.
Yeah, because
new moon was in my third house, which now is going to be my ninth.
Yeah.
I'm right on the cusp of publishing my own website and moving from just simply a student of astrology to applying what I've learned.
Yeah, he's got Venus at this degree, body degrees. So you got Uranus on the moon, Uranus moon. Whenever Uranus hits the moon, Uranus takes 84 years to go around the chart. So it's a once-in-a-lifetime passage. Mm-hmm. And what happens when the planet of that symbolizes the starry heavens and astrology and intuition hits your moon sign? Your moon, your gut, your basic intuition, your basic emotional intuition is hooking up with your cosmic intuition and going, it's time for radical change. So it brings about, moon governs the nesting instinct, home. So like, I need to move. Relocation time. You know? So it brings these like strange sudden moods, like just like one day you just come home and pack everything up and go, you know?
You just described everything that's going on in my life. I'm moving. Yeah. I just talked about with a teacher, like doing a mentoring, like tutoring thing in astrology and how to apply that to psychotherapy. And I'm about to start a grad program. And
Everything's
crazy.
And it's like 6 months. That's almost like the end of this semester.
Yeah, exactly.
First semester, yeah.
Let's put it this way. I've had PhD psychologists at universities hire me to do sessions for their clients, and they took notes behind me. Because like one of my clients that said, wow, one session with Kelly, one session with astrology really saved me a year's worth of therapy. So basically, this cuts right to the bone. You don't got to lay on the couch and go, so how was your relationship with your father?
Right, yeah.
Just go, oh, let me see here. Oh, yeah, like we know there's a deep wound in your family.
Mm.
And you're coming in this lifetime to heal it. Mm. And it's around issues of communication, trickery, deception, trade. You know, Alan, you're from Israel, the Hebrews. They were master of trades, masters of trade.
Mm.
So it goes way back. You have this power of the healing power that comes into your hands, from your family. It's like, wow. Like,
mm.
So you gotta, and the grand square is like, the grand square, we call that the Atlas syndrome, where you're holding the weight of the world because you're pulled in four directions, you know. So you're pulled in this direction, that direction, this direction, this direction. So Mars in the seventh house is saying, I want to experience discernment in cooperation with others, and I'm driven towards relationship. And the moon's saying, no, stay true to yourself. You're attached to who you are, and be strong, and be a warrior, and be a pioneer, and don't care about that. And then over here, Conrad's over here going like, but you gotta heal your family. You're like, deep down inside you take away all the layers of the onion, and down here at the bottom, at the core, you are a mentor, a guide for others, a healer. You got Conrad and Nader. Through your words, through your communication, you have things to say that are gonna change people's lives. So Conrad's like, deal with the program. And then at the top of the chart, you're right, it's like, but wait a minute, what about cosmic consciousness? I want to take the road less traveled and walk to the sound of a different drummer in my calling. And like, you want me to sign up for a 9-to-5 job and work this? No, I got to do something different. And I got to honor Gaia, Ceres, the grand goddess, the mother of Earth, and Neptune, the sea. So there's like, Neptune's like, you have a spiritual calling, you know?
Yeah.
It's in the invisible realms, you know? Neptune, Poseidon, Lord of the Sea. So Uranus, Neptune together in a tenth house. You're like a spiritual, astrological art therapist who brings in nature and healing and earthy stuff. And Saturn's there too, saying cycles of time. And so all this is pulling.
Wow, that's
it's all there.
That's perfect.
And we're not even scratching the surface yet. Like if the iceberg is this big, we put it like this, a little tiny chunk up.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how deep. When I look at this, I hear music. I'm like,
wow.
Mars over here going, boom, 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 boom. And it's like, and it's in the eighth house going, ding, 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 going down. And so and you see Venus and Libra, it's like, I am the beautiful one. I am like Persephone being abducted into the eighth house of sex, death, and rock and roll to experience death and rebirth and finally the loss of innocence, but the gaining of empowerment in the feminine, you know? The queen of the dead. So you have the ability to speak Mercury to Pluto, the lord of the dead, in the underworld, the eighth house here. The ancients call this the gates of Hades. So you have the ability to say things that people don't really want to hear but really need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to communicate. Mercury was the only god that was able to go down into the underworld and be a messenger for the god. And when Mercury's conjunct Pluto, it's like, you have a gift of research. You can find out anything. I mean, the eighth house, you have the ability to do research and detection ability, and in people's psyches, you have the ability to be a speaker for the dead parts within them that they've buried, and you can see into the buried treasure with mercurial perception into the underworld. So when you're standing with somebody, talk to them, they're like, what are you looking at? You're like, should I say it? You're going to hate me if I say this, because I'm just the messenger. You're like, don't shoot the messenger. Yeah, but you have the ability to speak to that stuff, to resurrect it, to bring it forth and show it right to their eyes and say, this is what's been, you're denying and you're not seeing the power. So you have power with words. You can speak the word. You got a Jesus thing going on. Because Pisces is rising, I'm the mystic, I'm the poet. Unify heaven and earth. These two are coming together. So your new moon's in the third house. You're definitely in starting a new season of learning. It's going to flower in 6 months into like this great realization. It's going to lead into your calling, which is awesome.
Wow.
And then the fact that when you look at learning, also you want to look at Jupiter, because Jupiter is the planet of expansion. And look at Jupiter. Bam! Right on your third house cusp. So this new moon comes every year. It won't have an eclipse like this every year. So this is three times more intense, the new beginning and your learning that's happening.
Wow.
But since Jupiter's there, Jupiter in India, they call it Guru. It's the Guru. So when Jupiter comes around, Om Hrim Brihaspataye Namaha, that's the mantra for Jupiter. So you bring up Jupiter mantra, it's like Jupiter says, I'm here to blow your mind. That's all there is to it. But the next year, Because Jupiter takes 12 years to go around, mm-hmm. and it's going to go retrograde in Gemini and spend the whole year in here. And it says, I'm here to expand your perspectives to a level you've never seen before. Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe 12 years ago, but you were younger, you know, dealing with other issues. So now Jupiter's here going, you've had your Jupiter return. You're fresh out of that 23-24 thing. Mm-hmm. You've got your sort of solidity together. You have a sense of foundation and what your value is. You've been evaluated. And now you know what you like and what you don't like. Mm-hmm. And now it's time to go for it, you know, explore it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Saturn's in the 8th house, conjuncting your Venus, saying, that relationship is over. Because Saturn is the lord of time. He's a big-ass guy. He's made of adamantine, and he can do the cut it out. So Venus, love issues with Saturn. Saturn there saying, like, okay, this relationship can work, any relationship that you're in, but with Saturn there, it's saying, if it has the highest integrity and the highest truth, and there's wisdom involved, that, you know. But most of the time with Saturn on Venus, it's like, it's over. especially if you haven't had your Saturn return yet, you know, because Saturn comes to Saturn. Now, astrology's not concretely predictive, it's archetypally predictive. Mm-hmm. So the archetype of Kronos, wisdom, the elder, has come to Venus, relationships. So you're meeting older people, you're ready to grow in your maturity, in the way you're functioning in relationships. And the fact that the 8th house is here, it's the house of death and rebirth. That's why I'm sensing, like, something's dying in relationships for you. An old way of being in love is bye-bye.
Yeah.
And Saturn's coming across there to bring more maturity. And Saturn's about growing and commitment. So I've seen some people with Saturn Venus, like, meet the love of their life and they make a lifelong solid commitment. But if you're in a relationship and nobody's being honored and it's not really flowing, Saturn comes along and goes, whoosh, here comes the sky. And so, yeah, so you're in a 2.5-year period of Saturn, Kronos, going down into the 8th house, the underworld. 8 on its side looks like infinity, so engaging the infinite, the eternal being of the universe. So Saturn, he was a titan named Kronos. And after the great war with the Olympian gods, he was, like, imprisoned in Tartarus, which is, like, the lair below Hades. Like, he was below hell. So he's sitting down there. He's still got his skies, and he still governs agricultural cycles. They let him have that. Like, you're the lord of sowing and reaping in time.
Is that the horned god?
Well, Kronos is related to that, yeah. Yeah,
Saturn's the horned god. Interesting.
Yeah, that's the horned
god. I've been obsessed.
Yeah. Well, that you're right now you're in love with the horn god.
Yeah, I even have antlers around.
Yeah, because Saturn has that whole imagery that goes with it. Kronos. But anyway, so yeah, but it's going to be 2.5 years. So it's a great time to be getting into psychotherapy. Because this is the house of psychology. Saturn's the planet of maturity, crystallization of wisdom. So it's time to gain wisdom in this area. Mm-hmm. Because basically you got about 5 years till Saturn gets the top of your chart. And when it gets there, bam, this is the rising into what the world needs you to be doing.
Mm.
So there's a period of letting go and releasing and breaking down, and that's what this 8th house period is about. But then there's a period of intense higher education, 9th house, focused with a serious concern for doing this calling in the world. When Saturn comes to the top of the chart, we call it the harvest. This is where the grain, remember this guy, agricultural cycles? Mm-hmm. When Saturn gets to the top of the chart, you look at charts of famous people. Saturn gets to the chart. Wow, that's when they did their big thing.
Mm.
You know, that's when they committed to their life path, you know, in a big way. So, you know, you look down the road and say, 5 years from now? But right now is where you're at. And Jupiter in the third down here is saying, hey, time to expand. And if you look at the lunation cycle, remember this 30-year cycle I was talking about? And we'll do yours too, Andrew. I forgot to look at yours. If you look at the tri-wheel, I'm going to simplify this just to the 7 traditional planets. I'd like to get my mythological lens focus. So, look at this. This is the progressions here. And look, here's your progress moon. 27 degrees, this is 22, 23, we'll round up. 3 to 4, 5, 6, 7. So 4 months ago, the progress moon, the mood of your soul, went into the 12th house of escapism, dreams, fantasies, mythic realm. So you're like, you need to be in this really spiritual place for the next 2.5 years when the moon's going into your... It's bringing more integration into everything you're experiencing, everything you're learning. So this is the integration period. Now look at the angle to the sun. You're also waxing because the moon's coming away from the sun. And in 5 years, it's going to rhyme with that Saturn getting to the top. You're going to have your full moon phase, which is the phase of illumination, fulfillment. That's like a major phase in people's lives. So you're like 5 years out from being like the coolest you possible. But you gotta get to that. Can you feel that? Yeah, 5 years, nothing. You know? So, yeah, but the tone, the progressed moon, if you notice, this is Pisces and this is Aquarius. So you're at 27 degrees Aquarius. So for the last 27 months, remember the moon moves 1 degree per month? For the last 27 months, you've been in Aquarius, you know. Break the rules, take the rules, let's travel, be different, be unique. Give yourself permission to think anything, you know. Mm-hmm. And in 3 months, bam, it's going into Pisces. So you're going to be in progressed moon, the moon of the soul, in Pisces, the sign of the mystic, poet, visionary artist, and the 12th house. It's like a double whammy of Pisces infusion. So spiritual integration is like the biggest thing on the menu here. And because you're in this phase here, called you're about to enter what's called the gibbous phase. Remember the gibbous phase, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're about to move into that. And the gibbous phase means almost full, but not full yet. So we got some integration to do. And you can see it right here. So it's going to just keep rising. But you'll be in the full gibbous here. This is the phase of creating a structure for your life. And this is the phase of like, bring things into like, edit them, make them, refine them, you know, make them work efficient and all that good stuff.
Mm. Can you tell me what phase I was born under? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Cool.
Which phase do you think you were born under?
The balsamic. But I don't know.
This is your chart, right?
Uh-huh.
See the sun here? The balsamic would be from here to here.
Oh, right.
Uh-huh. So the moon came out, it hit full moon at 12 degrees. Your moon's at 5 degrees. You're just before the full moon. So you were born under the gibbous phase of the lunation cycle.
Uh-huh.
Because you're just before the 12 degree mark, which would be the exact full moon. You're still born under the full moon. Like that night, the full moon was happening. You know? Because it was like, there it is. The moon's coming in. But just before the full moon, and the poetry of that is that you're a person who knows how to heal other people. You have a healing gift. Mm-hmm. Because the gibbous phase produces lots of healers, because they're masters of understanding what's wrong and how to fix things. And they usually have to heal all their issues first before they can become good healers. But because they've healed their issues, they know how to guide others through the dark. You know? Mm-hmm. How are you going to heal someone unless you've gone there yourself? You're going to stand in the underworld and point the way and don't even know what's down the road. There might be some goblins. I've been there. Take the left passage. And then you can, like, help people. Right?
Yeah.
By learning all this stuff you're learning. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of times when people are going through intense Saturn on Venus, plutonic stages like this, I'd be like, does that Master Suzuki said we don't need to learn how to let things go. We just need to recognize when they're already gone. That's what you're doing here. You're recognizing when it's already gone. And getting ready. Because Venus is about love. Venus is about your values. So Saturn's saying, take a serious look at your values. It's like an old man banging on you with a cane. Take a serious look at your values. So if you have any old wise men showing up in a dream, and a dream has a lot of death and rebirth and change, you'll know that Saturn is coming from out of the underworld. He came up from Tartarus and went in your dream and said, hey! Yeah. So, but yeah, your grand square, though, this is intense, because this is like pulling the weight of the world, you're being pulled in four directions. And the key is to come to center, focus, and realize you don't have to go for these four intentions. You can unify them by kind of finding a secret door and walking up a spiral stairway and coming out above it and go, getting above it and learning how to see how to integrate these two oppositions, because opposition symbolize tension for reconciliation. So this moon over here, and this sun over here, and this Mars, they need to be brought together. The moon in Aries says, I want to pioneer something new. And the sun's like, yes, but I'm about relationships. And Mars is like, but I'm a master of discerning what's right and what's wrong and what's functioning, what's not. And it's like, well, become a relationship therapist and try a new style, a new pioneering style, like bring in some astrology. That seems new. I forgot about it. And then, boom, it will fulfill the Uranian need for the cosmic connection of bringing in these cycles of time, this connection to earth rhythms and circadian rhythm, and bring in some Neptunian, like, visionary art therapy, and that'll bring in the Chironian force of the healer down in the fourth house, and everybody will be happy in the grand square. The whole grand square will be shaken.
That's, like, my ultimate vision, right? Like, literally.
And the cool thing about astrology, I could have told you that when you were a baby, laid in a crib.
Wow.
I don't need you here to know that. I'd be like, look at her destiny. All right, Andrew, just to get to your new moon here, you've got, we're going to do that progress thing here, try will. Ah, okay, so progressions are in the middle. Check it out. Here's the sun. His whole life has gone from 22 degrees to 14 degrees. So you can actually count, like, 22 and a half. So 22 to the point where it switched from Virgo into Libra was at, like, age 7 and a half. So at 7 and a half, there was a big defining shift because the path of self-realization, the sun, shifted to the next sign for 30 years, saying, we're going to integrate the artist, the diplomat, the negotiator, the peacemaker. You're like, I could see you as a 7 and a half-year-old, like, with your brothers and sisters around, and goes, I want justice! Because, like, this isn't fair! So you're like, the focus is on harmony. And then, of course, look at this, the moon, right there, bam, 13 degrees. What sign is that? Capricorn. So you're 13 months, which is about a year, 13 months, into the sign of getting serious about something, taking responsibility, grounding. You know, that's the archetypal focus. Capricorn, the entrepreneur, the executive, the wise elder. And look, 13 degrees, 14 degrees. What does that tell you? That means your progress moon, the moon of your soul, is about to walk off a cliff into the underworld. And for 2 years, you're going through an emotional, cathartic rebirth of the soul, which is going to be very, if you're on the spiritual path, it's like the most, it's right where you want to be. You know? If you're just an average Joe going along, you know, that's when, like, you know, a big car wreck has to happen to wake you up, you know? So it's good that you're on the spiritual path and realizing these things, because it's like, hey, it doesn't have to be painful. It's just about letting go of old emotional layers that are governing your heart that you don't need anymore. Yeah. And that's a process, you know? It takes 2 years.
Wait, so it's 1 degree and that's 1 month from
the moon? Because this is 1338 and that's 1446. It's like a month and a week. And you're moving into the eighth house. You can already feel it. It's been building up to the cusp for 5 months. You can feel things coming for 5 months.
And that's, 5 months.
Yeah, 5 months ago, something is about to die.
That's and when I graduated.
Yeah. You died. You got out of system. Like, what do I do with myself now?
And
kinda like,
and I had been in that Capricorn. I'm going to go to grad school and do these things. And then all of a sudden, it's just like,
because you're in Capricorn, you're like, I'm climbing the mountain of achievement.
Yeah.
One stone at a time. And then they're like, why is it getting cold? And it's suddenly, you'll be like, come back going like, you're right, Kelly. The progress moon took me down to the depths. My heart is on the table now. But you're more passionate about life then. You know, it's like, damn, you're in it. Because the eighth house evokes passion. I call the eighth house, because the second house is about possessions and belonging and security. I call this house of attachment. Attachments are good. We think of it in the metaphysics as, oh, you're so attached. But it's like, no, I like this tablecloth. I can be attached to it for a minute. You know, I'll be gone soon. I know about detachment. But that's what the eighth house is about. Eighth house is about death, the ultimate detachment. But sexuality, orgasm, that's a little detachment. letting go of things you don't need, clutter, ending relationships. We so celebrate the beginning of relationships, especially over in the second house. In the old times, it was like relationships weren't about getting married. It was like families making alliances. We're marrying our daughter to you. Here's the dowry. So the money came in. Second house. It was all about like security. We're securing the clans by arranging this marriage. Yeah? But you know, you still have these issues, like people financially working out their stuff. Right when people get married, what do? They sign up for like the Amazon.com shopping list so people can buy them marriage gifts. Why don't we buy marriage? Yeah. But then the eighth house is about letting go. We don't honor the end of a relationship as equally as we honor the beginning. Because we're too damn attached! No, we have to learn to like realize that life is a continual stream. Someone's got to die first. Even if you love this person, one of you is dying first. I don't care which one, but it's going to happen. So, basically, detachment is about seeing the bigger picture, understanding universal themes, and going with the flow of transformation and rebirth, which is really about aligning your will with the divine will. You know, it's like, whoa, how can I align my will? Easier said than done. When you align your human will with your divine will. So yeah, if you look at the phase here, notice the sun's at 14 degrees. And the moon's at 13 degrees. So guess what? The moon is about to enter the waxing quarter phase. Because they're going to be exactly square to each other. Look at that. Bam, bam. So that's, you're moving into the phase called the waxing quarter, which is about creating a structure to contain the spiritual vision that's been deposited in your soul. From the last 7 years, because these are 7 year increments. 7 years, 7 years, 7 years, 7 years. So, yeah, that's amazing. That was exactly when I published this book. I was holding this in my hand when my progress moon was squaring my progress sun. because I'd been like deepening and learning. And you know, when I started being an astrologer, when the new moon came, so during that 7 years, by the time I got to here, I was like, oh my God, I've learned things I've never read in books. Just doing five charts a night for tourists on the beach in the Key West, Florida. And then finally, I got to there, and it was like I was holding this in my hand. Wow. I'm still learning things from this book today. I just picked it up today. I was like, that was a good sentence, Chad. Anyway. Yeah. So anyway, the book you wrote back in the day, and I still teach it. I'm like, wow. But, okay. Next. Let's see. Who's next?
Okay.
You're nervous?
Yes.
Don't be nervous.
That's you're a red.
K A T I?
I E, yes. And the Zeman, Zeman.
Zeman. Isn't there Zeman Games? There's a game company called Zeman Games.
That's Zeman.
Oh, Zeman, yeah. Okay, date?
April 14th.
April
14th.
1989. And time?
5:03 p.m.
5:03 p.m.
Phoenix.
Phoenix. Arizona.
Yes.
So yeah, you don't gotta be scared. I mean, most people people come in there like you're an astrologer. Like, yeah. What time are you? I don't want to know. And I start walking away. I'm like, what do you mean you don't want to know? First of all, that shows that you've been lied to about what this is about. You know, it's not about like me predicting your future, what's gonna happen to you. This is not about that. This is about saying there are rhythms in time, archetypal rhythms. And if you learn to serve them, life is amazing. If you resist them because you don't know about them, because you're working from a place of unconscious, you're just going to like, you might have some good moments and then struggling moments and some good moments. And I'm not saying that on the spiritual path you don't have struggle moments. It gets worse. The struggles are in a bigger arena. Most people, like Dan Millman said in the book Way the Peace Warrior, Socrates, he says, you know, Dan, most people are striving to be extraordinary in an ordinary realm. Whereas on a spiritual path, you're striving to be ordinary in an extraordinary realm. I was like, wow, that's it. So anyway, so don't worry, there's no fear here. There's just happiness. And poetry. To me, I'm a poetic astrologer. People are like, what kind of astrologer? Evolutionary, Vedic, mundane. I'm like, poetic?
I like it.
All right. Oh, I like looking at the chart. First of all, this happened by accident. Accident, quote unquote. I don't have all seven. I have the seven traditional planets. I really love looking at charts just in the seven traditional planets because you can see the core person. In our love of everything bigger and brighter and newer in the modern world, we're like, run out to Uranus first. Throw in some asteroids. Spice it with hypothetical points. And so we got all this crap in the chart, and we can't see the person anymore. The seven planets are called the personal planets, and yet we ignore them for understanding the person. That's why I use them as the seven traditionals. That way you can see. Oh, look, Jupiter is in Gemini, and Mars is too, governed by Mercury. Mercury's in Taurus, grounded mind, in the eighth house of deep introspection, just like our equals have Mercury in the eighth house. Mm. But she's in Aries, and Venus is in Aries, and Sun is in Aries. And Libra's rising. So it's funny, like, you walk the path of a warrior, the light bearer, you know, the tribe, the pioneer, the trailblazer, the leader, and yet you have Libra rising, the sign of negotiation and harmony and peace and justice. I've actually seen people with Libra rising named Justice. I'm like, name's Justice? You have the scales of balance rising at birth, and your parents are named Justice? Do they know about this? Like, no. I'm like, that's just too cool. But anyway, her name's Katie. Maybe there's something in there. Katie. Catherine.
Mary Catherine.
Something around there. Anyway, the Sun's conjunct Venus, too. So you see a Venus theme. Anytime you see three themes repeat in the chart, like, doot, doot, doot. So she got Libra rising, discovered by Venus. She got the Sun conjunct Venus, which is another Venus, Venusian thing going on here. And then her Mercury's in Taurus, a Venus sign. So Mercury governs some power in this chart. Because the Moon's in Leo. So you got the soul of the performer, the magical child. You just want to play in a community with other people. In the 11th house, you're like, can we all collaborate and have fun and do a theater tonight? Because the Moon in Leo is like, I have the soul of one who finds emotional commitment through creativity, through dramatic performance. You're like, how can we play? How can we be drama? You know? And so the Moon in Leo wants to shine in that way. Born under the waxing quarter, just like me. So you're also here. There's a waxing quarter theme here tonight. Because you're in your waxing quarter. Mm-hmm. You're in yours, just like in a month from now. I was born under it. She was born under it. Mm-hmm. So, waxing quarter. Which I love that phase, because it's like when things are waxing and the plant's developing a structure, and it's time to create a structure that can contain the seed vision of what was born at the inception of the cycle. So, having Moon in Leo in the 11th house is kind of a reverse theme, because the 11th house we call the House of Aquarius. It's really about fellowship. You know, the Moon says, I need fellowship with healers, because the Moon is about the people who caretake and protect and nurture. And Leo, creative people who are dramatic and theatrical. You're like, who are my homies? Who are my cosmic clique? The healers and the performers. Go meet them. And then Libra's rising, see how you wear the mask of the artist. But anyway, and then you got Saturn down here. The cool thing is you got Saturn down here at the bottom of the chart. What we call this is a bucket chart, because you got all these planets forming the bowl, and then across the way there's the handle, right? You got an upside down bucket in your chart. Somebody's swinging it up in a dramatic fashion. Leo Moon. And so, because you're a double fire sign. Look at this. Aries with, with Leo. But with Libra rising. So you're packing a lot of punch, but in a very diplomatic way. You're like, would you like to negotiate? And they're like, no. they're like, you're supposed to be a woman. Why aren't you acting out like society says women should act? Because I will rip you new. And I got an Aries sun with a Moon in Leo. I have the soul of a queen walking the path of a great warrior. Packed behind gentle Libra rising. I'm here to collect social knowledge so we can form tablets of justice so everybody can live in harmony. And so, but down here at the bottom of the chart, in the basement of being, you have Saturn, old Kronos down there with his sky ticket. And he's in Capricorn. He's in his own sign. It's like, I don't answer to none of y'all's, because I'm down here in my own sign, Capricorn. Nobody tells me what to do. You know? So the sun's in Aries, Venus is in Aries, they all answer to Mars. Mars and Jupiter answer to Mercury, because Mercury's in Taurus. Mercury answers to Venus, and Venus is back in Aries. So you have like a, basically what's called a dispositor chain here at the top of the chair. So all these planets are like a little tribal council. They're all going around, blah, 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 blah. And Saturn's down here going like, but I'm the leader. I might be down here in the basement of the chart, but y'all better get with the agenda, because I'm the president of this thing. So basically you have what's called, it's like a democracy, where like Saturn's your president, and this is like your Senate. And like the Aries people are the warmongers, Republicans over here are like, to war! And then the Gemini and Mercury's like, education and health! And inside you, the way you make your decisions, your consciousness is where like, we have this fight going on between education and then like pioneering and being a warrior. And then Saturn's in the bottom saying like, let's get organized, people. And Saturn's in his own sign. Saturn, the planet of organization, in the sign. But the thing is, you have a bucket. What that means is, a bucket means spiritual devotion. It's related to the Pisces-Virgo axis, which is this axis here, of spiritual devotion. Yeah, we're getting to that. And in the north, but the Saturn down here at the bottom is saying, your chart shows in the seven churches of planets that there's a spiritual devotion. All these guys up here are focused on Saturn's agenda. Mm-hmm. So, I'll share another chart like this, just to give you an example, okay. A really dramatic example. Who do I want to look at? How about visual arts? How about, we got lots of people here. What I was thinking was Da Vinci. He might be into the scientists. Science, since he's an inventor. He's a Renaissance man. I have a search feature. Da Vinci. Anyway, Da Vinci has a bucket to Saturn. There he is. He's under visual arts. I just didn't go down to the V's. He's in the V's. Vinci. Okay. Anyway, so we're opening Da Vinci. We got a seven years of look at that bucket! There's a bucket in the chart pointing at Saturn. Mm. So what you got here is you got this person who has this visionary imagination, Moon in Pisces, with a very earthy texture. Think of the Mona Lisa, how earthy and sensual. But then that Moon and the sign of the dreamer, Mars in Aquarius, like, I'm going to invent something. He's like, I just want to paint, but like, since these kings and nobles want to fight wars, I can make a good damn catapult. So I'll invent you a catapult, but you got to give me money so I can paint pictures, okay? But look, and he was an engineer. Look at that. Saturn at the midheaven. So this is saying, the spiritual devotion of the bucket pattern is saying, you need to be devoted to Saturn, the planet of mastery, in the sign of Libra, the artist, in the 10th house of your profession. Master of art. Mm-hmm. So, taking that example and going back to K.G. Zeeman and saying, wow, all these planets are saying you need to be a master of Capricornian wisdom and organization and management and structure in the fourth house of homes, roots, and families, down there in the emotional core. So it's like, wow, you could achieve mastery in managing emotion? Or, you can interpret this in many different ways. You might not be Da Vinci here, but you got your own deal going on. You got a lot of information coming through you with that Gemini and Mars and Jupiter. And that's what a new moon is. The subject of tonight is that when you look at the bio wheel, there's a new moon. I'm going to put all the planets in to freak everybody out. What you see, Uranus crossing your moon. Like her, you're like, wow, I just moved. Because, you're right. Shocking moon, home. Shock to your home. Planets, all the planets. There you go. Okay, so look at the new moon. Here's the new moon. Look, the moon's at 2 now. It's been moving since we're talking. Over that one hour ago, half an hour ago. So you got the new moon right on the cusp of your ninth house. See, that's the cusp of your ninth house, 1 degree. So what's that saying? It's saying, oh, you're polarizing with her. Where she's planning new moon in the third house of exchange. You're having the new beginning in the house of meaning, bringing new philosophy into your life, Because the ninth house governs religions, philosophy, seeing the big picture. So here we are, you come to astrology class and you're seeing a big picture of planets moving through the heavens, symbolic of rhythms and textures and time periods in your soul. And you're like, he's telling me that the new moon is not only in my ninth house of meaning, it's conjunct Jupiter, the planet of meaning and integration. So yeah, your philosophy is being shocked. No, I'm just kidding. Over the next 6 months, because ninth house also governs travel, it's the best month to plan travel. Because the new moon's in the house of life. The ancients call this the house of long journeys over water. So when the new moon's in the house of long journeys over water, it's like, I gotta go somewhere. I got at least plan a trip for 6 months from now.
I'm going to Ghana in July.
Oh, really? You're going away?
To Ghana.
French Guiana? Or Guiana?
Ghana in Africa.
Oh, Africa. Okay, cool. Ghana. What kinds of Guianas and Ghanas are out there? There's even a Guinea or whatever in northern Australia. Okay. All right, so, yeah. So someone says Ghana, I'm like, which one? But anyway, yeah, so your whole focus right now is a new beginning. The sun and moon, the hearts of the chart, the sun symbolizes your physical heart, vibrancy, vitality. So if you do your sun sign right, you'll feel vital. So when you're doing therapy with people, say, look, the two main plagues of our civilization are depression and fatigue. So if you do your moon sign right, you'll be happy all the time. If you do your sun sign right, you will be having full of vitality, energy, and you'll be happy. So get those two right, boom. When I say my mean right, for instance, if I was Katie, I'd be like, hey, my son's in Aries in the seventh house. My life purpose is about being a pioneer in the field of cooperation. How can I be a liberator, light bearer, pioneering diplomat? I'll go to Ghana and talk to some people. So all this warrior energy, this Aries fire of like, I want to start something new, is, and you having that pioneering streak, having that Saturn down here, this is like the ace in your sleeve, having a mastery of organization. I mean, if you're going to start a pioneering foundation that involves collaboration and cooperation, it's like Saturn's down there going, I can organize anything. Because, this is down here in the fourth house. It might be suppressed in the subconscious. It might even come from ancestors. The fourth house has to do with ancestors. There might be 7 generations back, some grandfather down the line was saying, or grandmother saying, I'm a master of organization in my community. And you got that from her, and you got to develop it. You know what I mean? So a lot of times, 7 generations back, we have to like, oh, yeah, I heard about this weird aunt that was all artistic, and she did this kind of, and I knew that. I must have got that from that great aunt. So we have ancestral, you can actually look at charts of all your, if you have the charts. You can go on like ancestry.com and like trace your ancestry and find what day they were born at least, and then just cast a chart for the day. Don't worry about the rising sign, just where's the planet? And then go, ooh, look at that, I got that same aspect in my chart. So you can like see how you're wired. Or just your mom and dad, like I have the moon trine Uranus, and my mom has the moon trine Uranus. We both have unpredictable emotions. And we're interested in weird, unique, metaphysical stuff. Yeah. So yeah, it's called, there's a book called Dynasty, The Astrology of Family Dynamics. It's really powerful.
Dynasty?
Everybody's writing that down. Yeah. Dynasty, yeah. I forgot the author. I just read the book. It's one of the greatest dramas of our time, huh? Bloop, bloop, bloop. So, yeah. I think it's coming to me. Anyway, we have the internet.
why do I need my brain? I'm like, we have the internet. Why do I need your brain? The internet doesn't seem to be working. Oh, there's the internet. I don't know the code off the top of my head. Anyway, internet's not functioning for some reason. That's cool. We don't need to. You know the title. Just type it in. Dynasty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the focus. And
do we look
at your progress? Oh, the new moon saying plant a new seed in the field of ninth house, which is the house of travel, exploration, expanding your perspective.
Check.
And basically, like 6 months from now, remember, like 6 months from now, when November rolls around, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, and then a week. And a week. 6 months and a week. Boom! So there's going to be a full moon. Actually, I went too far. Go back! Run! Hide! Okay, right there. There it is. November 28th. Okay. So right around this time, there's going to be a full moon in your ninth house. And then November 28th, you'll be like, am I fulfilled in my travels? In my philosophy? In my multicultural expression? I mean, you'll just have spent 6 months in Ghana. You'll be like, way fulfilled. You'll be like, yeah, I'm in my cycle. I mean, like, these cycles run independent of whether we participate. Because yeah. Otherwise, how could I sit here and be like, hey, look, you're going traveling. But, again, there's many different levels that each house symbolizes. There's the physical level, which is actually the smallest level. Mm-hmm. There's the mental level, the emotional level, which is the biggest, farthest reaching anyway. And then there's the archetypal level of dreams and mythic images and cultural stories and memes and all that. And then there's the spiritual level. So it can come out on every level. Obviously, you're taking a physical journey, right? Yeah. It's going to have an emotional impact, a mental impact. You learn new languages. We experience these things on many different levels. So there's five different levels of expression for each house. You know, like second house has to do with money. Like right now, Saturn's in your second house going like, how's your finances doing? Because I'm here to like... teach you a lesson.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of tickets lately.
Yeah. Because the test. Oh, and Aries getting a lot of tickets. Imagine that. I'm going too fast. Saturn in the second house is putting a damper on the finances for the first round or for the next 2 years, because.
2 years.
Saturn takes 30 years to go around this here whole chart. So when it comes to the second house, it basically asks the question. Saturn's a taskmaster. It comes around and says, "Have you been being responsible in this area?" You know? So, like, imagine 2 years ago, if I turn this to years, 1, 2, when Saturn was, three years ago, was sitting right on your ascendant. So around 2009, 2010, when around November, Saturn was on your first house saying, Kenny, it's time to get your act together. It's time to get serious, grow up, mature as an individual. So that was 3 years ago. Saturn was right there. Yeah, and now Saturn's coming around going, okay, you've made a serious commitment to self-expression. You understand Libra balance and harmony and working with others and being a master of Libra. Libra is the root for Libra, the part of the tree that they're making books out of, paper. It's also the root for liberty. And also in Spanish, they call books Libro. So it's like, hey, your rising sign is about social knowledge. And here's Saturn saying, I'm crossing through here, let's go. Because in the year 2020, we're entering a global renaissance when Jupiter and Saturn get together in Aquarius. And if you have an air sign rising, like, you're part of that. like, I have something to add to this global renaissance. Maybe I'll work in international affairs. I'll go to Ghana and speak a new language and pioneer a new organization. You know, something's going to come out of you. It's going to be powerful. But right now, Saturn's in the second house saying, like, let's ground out. Let's get serious. Let's make a budget. That's what Saturn's about. He goes to the second house. So, like, if someone's been really disciplined about money issues, then they tend to gain a lot of money when Saturn goes to the second house. Because they're like, hey, look, you've been responsible. So here comes Saturn. Right now it's at 23 Libra. It's going to go retrograde back to 22 and then come forward and cross into Scorpio in October. So in October, you know, if you've been having a budget, you've been being serious about your resources and attachments and life situations, then Saturn's going to be, in terms of like money, and values, your value, really it's about values. Money's the outer shell of the symbol. Second house is about values, what do you value? The Taskmaster Saturn is coming to say, in October, have you been true to your values? And if not, there's going to be some pain. But so that you can align yourself with your values, you know?
Yeah.
And so, in your highest values or your ideals, you know? What are your ideals in life? And when Saturn comes to the second house, it just says, I'm going to crystallize your ideals. And it might be painful because you're not living up to them yet. But if you are, there's like a reward. And I've seen people gain money when Saturn's in their second house because they were already in line with your values. And they did organize their money in a way that they learned to value the simplicity of life. Sunsets. You know, just reading a book instead of spending all this money on grandiose things, you know? It's like, oh, Saturn came along and said, you deserve more. Because you're on track, you know? So valuing simplicity, you know, Saturn, by October, Saturn's going to be in there, so it'll be a really good time. Of course, you're about to have your Jupiter return. See, Jupiter's about to enter Gemini, right there, and cross your Jupiter. See Jupiter on Jupiter? Mm-hmm. And so what that does, at 23 and some change, it comes around 23, 24. First time it comes around, you're 11 and 12. So in psychological development, that's when we start being able to have the ability to think abstractly. See the big picture. You know? Like Jesus in the temple. Why is Jesus in the temple at 12 talking to the priest? Oh, because in the ancient world, at 12, that was supposed to be the time of Jupiter's spiritual explosion in the head. Why did they wait? He wait till 30 to start his ministry? Because in the ancient world, it was a symbol of, at 30, you're able to be a master. You know, because Saturn has come around. These days, we stretch 14 out to 30, and then we get to mastery at 44. But we are capable of it. It's just that the society stretches it out in video games. And, you know, like, just focusing on lame things. That in the ancient world, you're 14, you're, like, getting married already. You're starting a family. You were, like, out there hunting with a man. You were the young adult. You had a spear, though. And you were seen as effective as the next guy. And what was I going to look at here? Oh, yeah, Jupiter's crossing Jupiter. So that comes around 23, 24. It says, hey, it's time for another expansion perspective. It's bigger than the one at 12, because at 12 you're just like going from like toddler kid to like young adult, and then suddenly this thing happens and you're like, wow, 24, I'm like gonna have a deep spiritual expression that's gonna affect the next 12 years of growth. That's what these cycles are about. Like whatever's coming in right now, it's affecting the next 12 years of Jupiterian growth. So this trip that you're going on, whew, it's gonna really like stir some things in you and like really help you define the next 12 years of growth. Especially going to Africa. Going to the heart. The heartland. Gondwana land, they used to call it. You know, all the continents. Pangaea. Gondwana land. First cavemen. And you're going back to the source. And so it should be an interesting journey, to say the least. Did we look at your moon phase? Yeah, you looked at your moon phase, right? Dynamic. I will. Yeah, that was a new moon. And we got to try. Try will to progress. Oh, there's the sun. Oh, no, we didn't look at yours. Look, your sun's at 17 degrees because your whole life, you know, if you count 23 degrees from 25, you're about at 18 right here. So that's the progress sun. It's moved from there to there. The progress moon started here. The progress moon comes around at 27.3. And it gives you like this emotional auric Saturn return rebirth to get you ready for the real Saturn return, 29.5. But, yeah, you have a situation where the moon is at 23 degrees of Gemini. So the last 23 months, you've been doing lots of reading and writing and learning. Yeah. And it's in the ninth house of higher education. So, you know, when this started back in... So you just came into your new moon phase. This started back in October 2010. The moon went into Gemini, the sign of information and trade and communication and learning in the ninth house of higher education. So it's like you were just wired for learning this last since October 2010. But the new moon actually began. I'm backing it up. Right there. See? The sun and moon were at 14 together in September 2009. So remember how I said this is the phase of the balsamic, so about releasing, letting go, going through this intense dark transformation to let go of an old life to begin a new life. So your new life began around September 2009. So basically that means that 2006, 7, 8 were like, oh man, why did I feel like I was going through intense psychological trauma and rebirth and art therapy? Yeah, it's like, dang, that was intense. Do you remember those years?
Oh, yeah.
She's like, oh yeah. She's like, oh yeah. Yeah, that wasn't, so, but now you're in a new life and a new cycle. And, you know, when it gets to 3.5 years from now, that's 1, 2, 3 plus 6 months. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You'll be in your crescent phase. Which is about creating the life you're meant to create in this. Because in a new moon phase, you're not sure where you're going yet. But that's the point. You're like learning how to think with your instincts, not oh yeah, the advisors are telling me this. It's like, no, you gotta trust your gut.
Because this phase is about the invisible and the new. And so it feels like your soul's like, got a full tank of gas and ready to trek off into uncharted territory. And you're like, let's go. and the goal is to trust your gut, trust your instincts. You go to Africa, be like, I'm gonna be an instinctual warrior out here, climbing around with a tiger in a tree. I got Moon Gemini, so I have to comedicize.
Yeah.
Tell the story, yeah. But a lot of famous comedians like George Carlin, Jim Carrey, Obama has Gemini Moon. Great writers and teachers and speakers. And funny people. Funny man, comedian. So sometimes you make it fun. I think humor releases truth, you know. Mm. And here's Chad. It's my bumper sticker. Humor releases truth. I won't have a bumper sticker because I'm a car. I just ride a mountain bike around. But I don't participate in oil culture. That's how I have authentic power at the local level. I don't participate. But, and I get exercise. And I rode my bike 3,200 miles last year.
Wow.
I went from here all the way to Wyoming and Montana and British Columbia and all the way down the coast of Oregon. It was great, man. Wow. Except for that one day when I had to ride 107 miles. And I was like, walking down, my legs were shaking, and I almost fell over. I just fell over. But anyway, look at this chart. Chad here is a very interesting character. Just to give the download here. Chad has the sun in Aquarius. The sign of the great humanitarian. Every sign starts off with this five-phase flow. Remember the five-phase flow? Aquarius starts as the rebel nonconformist. Like, what? I have to do what? No. And then they grow into the scientists of adventure. We're like, leave me alone. And they're like, what if I put this with this? Like, ooh, an invention. And then you get to discover that, and you're like, hey, people trying to control me? Look at this. You know, what if we integrate? Then you're the reformer. You know, you're like, I'm the freedom fighter. I'm trying to liberate these people. Because they've been doing that, they've been telling me to do that, and I didn't want to do that because I knew it was wrong, and now I got a hint that I can help them do better when they're reforming us. And then you're like, and then once you do that for a while, you become the humanitarian. You're like, oh, I have this humanitarian zeal opened up in me. Collaborative living. We can do this, humanity. And then you get to the top of the chart, in Aquarius, at the spiritual level, is the cosmic prophet, the astrologer, the metaphysician, and the philanthropist, who's like, wow, how can we help everyone get their gifts online? So astrology is one path, like, oh, look, you're cool. Let's get you going. Using all your gifts and talents. Because you're born in response to a spiritual need on the planet. So the planet is a living being, and we are consciousness merging with form, rising out. For so many years, being an expression of this beautiful planet going around this amazing star, floating through space. So we're like rising out of the form of the earth and emerging with spiritual consciousness, and we're like mud creatures. Anyway, and then here we are, you know, we're like, wow, what are we going to do with this? And so, and a lot of people like to take astrology in the reincarnation direction, you know, like one past life, now you've come back to do this. And it's cool and all, but at the same time, I like to focus on the now and not blame the past, you know. I like to focus on, like, hey, here is the moment you were born. And it's a expression of what the planet needed out of you. So here you are. And at any moment, five people per second are being born. That's the stats in the modern world right now, as of now. Five per second. If you think of that, there's 240 seconds happening in each degree of the zodiac. So at the degree rising where you live, at that moment, 5 seconds, 5 to 240, there's like 1,200 people being born at the same time on the planet. But the same rising sign as you, divided by 12, is like 120. But then you narrow it down deeper and it gets to like your area of your zodiac, and it's like, there's like 12 of me walking around. Yeah. And like, somebody's going to do it, and I might do some parts, and somebody else might do other parts. Because I've met 3 other people on the planet, just like me. I'm like, wow, we even look alike. Same rising sign, same degree. We're on the same day, the same hour. It's like, dude. And then I recognized what part he was using, and I recognized what part I was using. But I was like, that's cool. I'm trying to strive for holistic integration of everything. Because these are the parts. But you're not the parts. Like, Chad is not a moon in Scorpio with an Aquarius sun. He's the synthesis of those. And that's what the key to masterful chart interpretation is, seeing the synthesis. Because the true person that's sitting there is the synthesis, the holistic synthesis. And that's where emergence comes in. Like hydrogen and oxygen are gases. Put them together, water. What's the emergent property? Life. Paul McCartney, you know, gets together with all the other dudes, and guess what? George Harrison, who's playing the drums?
Ringo
Starr, yeah, and John Lennon. The synthesis of those four dudes created the Beatles. They all try to go and do it alone later in after the 60s and the 70s. We can't get back to that synthesis. And their egos have gotten too big to like get back together. But you know, for the most part, it's the synthesis that we're looking for here. You know? So here we have this Moon and Scorpio feature on Uranus, which rhymes with Aquarius anyway. Like, what? I have unpredictable emotions and I'm pretty intense. I have this silent intensity in me that's like, I want to do some research! Leave me in my lab! And it's in the third house, burning with curiosity, because the third house is the Gemini house. I'm like, exchange! My soul needs to do some research and some exchange in a very unusual way, and I need to think in ways that are taught to think. And Uranus is in the third house. It's like Einstein had it. See, it's like, I have the planet of genius and the house of perception. The way I see the world, and most people, not the same. Not the same. We're all doing different things here, especially me. Anyway, so yeah, so this is his book. And then that moon over there, the sun, you can see what phase he's born in. He was born under the disseminating phase, because 21 to 21, he had to be there for the waning quarter. This one. So you're like at the end of this one. See? The moon came all the way around, and it didn't quite reach 21. So it's in the disseminating phase. You're here to teach! Disseminate! And where's the new moon? The new moon's in Gemini. We have a solar eclipse. It's three times stronger. This is the most important new moon of the year. And so you look at this and it's like, oh, look at that. It's on his ninth house side of the midheaven, but pretty much conjunct the midheaven. So it's integrating the ninth and the tenth because it's on the ninth house side of the midheaven. So house of philosophy, travels, journeys. But the main focus here is his calling. What am I here to do in the world? Because the sun and moon are up here saying, the seeds you plant in your advancement in society, in your calling, your vocation, 6 months from now, in November 28th, when the sun's shining a full moon in here, you'll be like all fulfilled in your calling. If you work it, you water the garden and weed the garden and work towards it. You know, this next 3 months, have a 3 month check in, and then 6 months, have a full moon check in, and then 9 months, you should be like, wow, look what I'm doing. It takes 9 months to birth the baby. You know, mm-hmm. Cycles and seasons and flow, you know. Actually, it takes a full year to birth the baby because you got 9 months to get to the form coming out, but then 3 months to lay in all the progressions. 3 months, 30 days, or 90 days, 90 years. So an archetypal human lifespan is right there in the wiring of a baby. Babies aren't fully born until, so average, about 3 months after they're born. Because they're just like, looking around, going, whoa, dude, what am I doing here? You know, and all this cosmic energy is coming and they're being imprinted. On day one, here's what was happening in the sky. That's going to symbolize year one. On day 10, your mom took you on a trip to see grandma. Oh, look, my progressed moon. Moon went into Sag on that day. Oh, look, when I'm 10 years old, look, now I'm going on a journey. So it's like it's all fractal in time relations, you know. That's what progressions are. Progressions are the fractals in the chart. And they said a day equal to a year, because a day is symbolic of a revolution of the Earth around its axis, whereas a year is a revolution around the whole sun. So there's the two big circles in the sky. And so, oh, I know why this is going now. My plug, I don't have my plug in. So my computer keeps saying, I'm going to save energy now. You're not plugged in. Plug into me, I'm pretty hyper. That's Aquarius. Yeah, we're electricity people. Look at Edison. Edison was an Aquarius. He literally brought light to the world. And sometimes we burn ourselves. I burnt myself making popcorn. I was making popcorn and was getting this power. I'm like, it's got to be a gusher. And one of them flying out. I went to grab it and it got my hand got between the stove and the wall. And I was like, ah! That's a Mars. Mars is the planet burns and cuts and scrapes. So right now, Chad's got Mars right on his first house cuss. Right there. I said, and he was driving up here the other day on his motorcycle. And he said, I saw all this stuff flying around and people were delayed. And I said, I should hurry. And then he thought, Mars is on my ascendant. The god of war and accidents is on my body. Maybe I should slow down. So we went like 15 miles an hour in the side lanes. to get by all the crazy you ever had. I was like, good thinking. Because on that day, the moon was like, what, in your house of death? You know, it was in Aries, in the house of death. It was in the sign of accidents, in the house of death. I was like, astrology might have just saved your life. We don't know for sure, but, you know. Yeah, so. But it's the realization that counts. So, yeah, he's got the new moon up there in the third house. And what phase is he born under? Does anybody know what phase he was born under? Oh, we already told you. The disseminating, because you got the 21 or 21 thing. That's how you can find out which. You just get this template in your head, and you just look where the sun is and go, where's the moon? Oh, right there. Oh, it didn't quite make it to here. So it's in there. So it's easy to see what the phases are. Every 3.5. You just go to the sun and pretend the sun's here at the bottom and go, whoop. So I'll do mine. Okay. I am. So what phase was I born under? There's the sun, put it at the bottom. The moon's going out. Ah, there's the moon. So I'm somewhere like right about here, which is the waxing quarter. So most waxing quarter people have a little more tension and crisis in their lives. But when you get a waxing quarter like this, with the sun in the air sign and the moon in the air sign, there's a little more harmony because they have a synthesis through a trine. See the trine? The trine is a creative collaboration, and it symbolizes creative expression. So, you know, my moon in Gemini says, I want to write something! I want to communicate something! And the sun says, how about astrology? And they're like, we could work together. You know, but like if I had a moon in Taurus, my moon in Taurus would be like, I want a garden! I want to be out in nature! And my sons in Aquarius like, no! We're going to the library to study metaphysics! And they're like, so you can feel the tension, you know? It's like, but working out that tension is part of the life path for people born under that, you know? They're like, this is what I'm here to work on. And that's the thing, is like, if you have a square, like I have the sun squaring Saturn. So, by the way, you see this like person who is feeling like pressured, you know? The Saturn square is like, that's an intense square. Squares are angles of conflict for growth. These are your biggest points of growth in life. And so when I was little, how did this translate? Sun in the sign of the rebel opposing authority, or squaring authority. You know? People tell me, I was like, why? Why do I got to do that? Like, no. You know? Teacher would go in the room and I'd be like, standing on top of the shelf, jumping around with myself and Leo, pretending to be a performer. And I wanted to be a stuntman as a kid. I was like, I want to challenge physical reality itself. We were riding in the back of a car one day. We were all sitting on the... My dad was going really slow. And my brother's like, Kelly, this is your chance to be a stuntman. They're always like, encourage me, yeah? So they jump out of the car. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, tumble down the road. I'm like, bleeding and cut up. And I'm like, stuntman! I'm like challenging physical reality itself. Like, I got this, you know? And there was moments where these peak experiences would happen. Like in a football field, I'd be coming. This guy would come to block me. And I would just jump over him. And I would fly over him and hit the quarterback from the air. Quarterback would be dropped back and go, whoa! Where'd you come from? So it's like, when you have the grand trine, you can kind of, you have a mastery of air. So intelligence. But if you could look at Da Vinci's chart, he had that grand trine too. So when you got a configuration, the configurations are important for your major life themes. You know? So if you put it all ahead of you, see the grand trine in there? Saturn, mm-hmm. Mars in Aquarius, that's his inventive genius as an engineer. And then Chiron, you know, in Gemini. So he brought a message forth in the seventh house of artistic expression that brought like a healing power. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so grand trine. So like with you, Gail, you're got that grand square. Look at that. Mm-hmm. You're like fighting yourself every which way. Like I'm doing battle in myself here. Because you got a square this way, a square that way, a square this way. So, to whom a great challenge is given, more is expected. Because you got all this power. Basically, the people would integrate their grand squares. They have a lot of power. They're the movers and shakers of the world. These guys can do anything. They can get this together. Mm. So once you get this together, and it sounds like you got all the parts in place. You know, the metaphysical, being the astrologer. You got the Chiron healer down here at the bottom through words. Gemini, that's what we do. We talk to people and heal them through words or bring integration through words. Moon in Aries brings in your pioneering spirit, you know. Because you got South Node in Libra. It's been just been lifetimes in relationships, people pleasing and being all, you know, basically attached to whatever everybody else around you thinks. In this lifetime, you're like, no,
I'm going to do my own thing. That's why I hang out with her. She's your friend. She's here. And she's like, here's how you do it. Do your own thing. And you're like, you're right. Really? Do your own thing? But then she has Libra too. She goes, but I'm here to learn how to be in relations with others. And you're like, well, I'm a master of that. I have my spiritual master's degree in negotiation and cooperation to the point that I forgot myself in past lives. So I'm pissed off about it, man. Because I'm too easily giving in to relationships and not doing my own thing, you know. So the moon in Aries was born when people have the moon on their south nodes. It's like really hard for them to get past what they're so used to and what they're naturally gifted in, that they like just stay stuck in this dark hole. It doesn't mean they're hopeless. It just means it's a big challenge to dig themselves out of that, being emotionally attached to what they're already good at, but is not serving them anymore. Your south node is your gift to others, and it's the key to integrating your north node over here in Aries. So you got the north node, the south node of Libra saying, you have beauty, grace, artistry, diplomacy, negotiation, mastery, but you don't know how to stand in the fire yet. The south node, north node and Aries saying, you're here to learn how to be a warrior. See, Chad here, he's got the south node in Aries. Yeah. She's like, oh, you want to fight, huh? He's like, boom, fight over. You know, he knows how to fight. He's a warrior. He's a pioneer. He's a daredevil. And then the north node and Libra saying, Chad, let's practice beautification and art. Chad's like, what? So at first he's like, I don't negotiate. But now he's like learning to negotiate because he's learning strategy. He's going like, wow, if I just learn to cooperate with people, like things just magically line up like never before. Like, yeah. Like he's got to like if he's going to the mini village, he's got to go through the gate and like put the peace bonds on his sword. So you can't draw it, you know? Like, wrap that thing up. You can't fight. You got to negotiate. If you want to be successful in this lifetime, it's not most people are, so, you know, but if you want to be a really amazing being, it's good to flow that. But I'm just saying that your moon is helping you move towards your north node. Because you have the soul of the warrior, and because these last 3 years as Uranus has been crossing that node, you know, because Uranus has been retrograding around over there. See, Uranus is 7 degrees now. So if you go back in months, just 2 months ago, it was sitting right on your moon going, revolution of consciousness, revolution of your heart, break free, you know? And then, of course, it was sitting back at 1 degree right there. See, 1 degree in January 2012. So basically, all through 2011, Uranus was just sitting on your... You were starting to feel the rumblings because it was coming up to 4 degrees. It went up to 4 degrees and stopped, like in June of 2011. But then, like, it had already crossed your node right here in March 2011. So basically all 2011, from March, when that earthquake happened in Japan, and the tsunami, that was like your wake-up call. You were saying, you have a destiny. And it's about being a devotee to the cosmic consciousness of the universe that pervades everything. Mm-hmm. And Uranus says, it's like striking your north node like a gong, going, boom! And so, time to wake up to it. And the north node is at the top of your chart. See that north node is at the top of your chart saying, what is your calling? What is your destiny? The point of destiny was on the 10th house of vocation. So it's like when destiny and vocation come together, you're not just working for the man. It's like you're really getting in line with your true spiritual purpose of being here. So, any questions? No, I'm just kidding. What else can we talk about? We'll go to Andrew. Andrew, any questions? Look at you. You got a grand trine too here in the water side. Woo, you got a healing gift, homie.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, people like you can like just touch people and take on their problems. It's like a sensitive, being sensitive to what's around you and be a mastery of imagination. You know? When I wrote about it in here, I said, page that somewhere around here, I got a grand trine. Oh. The water trines give you healing gifts, psychic vision, emotional responsiveness, deep imagination, magnetism, tranquility, detective abilities, and heightened sensitivity. See, me, I got the air trines. So I got idealism, inner vision, mental excitement, woohoo, artistic expression, genius, mental versatility, and skill and charm.
What did you read your thesis on?
Active imagination.
Active imagination. There you go. He's a Jungian. Yeah, that's perfect, too, because you got the Venus-Pluto over here. Because Venus is like art, and Scorpio is about transformation, and Pluto, too. So you got all that. And Pluto's in the sixth house, so you're meant to be working with intensity. and going down into the depths where nothing is forgotten. And then the moon in Pisces is like, I just like to dream, and I want to make that my location. Like, can I dream for a living? Einstein had the sun in Pisces in the 10th house. He said, imagination is more important than knowledge. Mm-hmm. So you got the moon in Pisces in the 10th house. He's like, I just want to heal people while I dream. And then, of course, you got this this trine to Jupiter. Yeah. If you can avoid the escapism issues. See, because that's the negative side of Pisces is escapism. Mm-hmm. So the moon in Pisces, I need my escape. I need to retreat from all this. I'm like a fish. I need to go hide under a rock at the bottom of the ocean. And then the moon Pisces, but redemption. You have a soul of a redeemer. Because Pisces, the core theme of Pisces on the is redemption. That's the core plot motif is redemption. And then your sun sign is in Virgo, right? And Virgo is about sacrifice. How can I serve others? So sacrifice and redemption. Spiritual, Pisces, devotion. And then your Gemini rising, right? It shows the way your body looks. Like wiry, skinny guy, Gemini rising, right? And Gemini's plot theme is comedy and understanding and storytelling. If you're like, how can we tell stories about these dreams to bring spiritual devotion through these plot motive of sacrifice versus redemption? You know, so these are just archetypes that are woven into every story you see, even if the author doesn't even know they're doing it. They're doing it. They're tapping into this amazing thing. If you like romantic comedies, comedy, Gemini, and love have come together. Libra and Gemini. It's so lighthearted and airy, and look what happened. You know? So, but then you get like Lord of the Rings, and it's like a quest to bring about redemption, you know, transformation. It was, you know, it's all these. Whereas Star Wars was more like a revolution and a quest combined. So, there are plot motives and things. But yeah, that's a cool trend you got there. But look at this opposition across the tower. Oppositions are angles of a flowering of awareness that's happening. Both sides are totally aware of each other. Imagine you're standing in a circle, right? And you're looking across the circle. The person directly opposite you is like the opposition point. That's the person you're most aware of. They're looking right in your eyes. You're like, wow. You can't even get away if they're looking right at you. So it's like, oh. So yeah, so an opposition has that kind of intensity. Because an opposition is an angle of a circle. The conjunction is a circle divided by nothing. That's why it's the most powerful aspect. You got a fusion of two planets, and they're starting a new cycle of expression, and they're just fusing together for good or ill. And the power depends on the planet. Like, if you get Mars and Saturn together, there's going to be a fight. Because Mars is like, the gas. Go! And Saturn's like, put on the brakes. You know, Saturn's like, restraint. Let's have a committee. And think about this. And Mars is like, no, charge! Yeah. So when you get these together, they don't really work well together, you know, because their alchemy is off.
So I was doing some reading about all these terms earlier, and the way that, like, people, explain it, I guess, mainstream is, like, more that, like, a conjunction or sextile, all that is, like, eat better versus like having like a square opposition, but it could be either way because it depends on what you're combining versus right.
Yeah, it depends on what you're combining and how you're combining. Mm-hmm. The number one thing is the consciousness level of the individual. The thing with the relationships, you can look at all the astrology charts and show all the connections and all the different levels of connection in a relationship. But if the two people aren't very conscious and they're like working from this, you know, more primitive level of like being, then there's not going to be a lot of hope in that relationship. Because I've seen the greatest synastry, all trines and beauty, everything that the mainstream says is beautiful to have, and I've seen these relationships turn into just like laziness and friendship, and like there's no spark. Like, what happened? You know? And then I see people with like squares and opposition, but they're really high level conscious people that are like really into like helping others and love and harmony and metaphysics, and they're like, they have the most amazing relationships. I'm like, wow, you guys are easily able to work out all your square dynamics. Mm-hmm. And actually, you thrive on it.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is like, when you have a square or an opposition, you want to thrive on it, you know? Like, for instance, you get that T-squared of Mercury, you know? You got Jupiter over here, and over here you got Saturn over here, and Mercury at the bottom. That's called a T-square. So think about that. He's got one big challenge, right? In your chair, you have four big challenges. You're like, oh my God, that's why you're like, you're pulling the weight of the world. Yeah. It's like, how do I do this? You got to get strong. You got to integrate the oppositions.
That's the thing, is there's a holistic synthesis between these two. So his Jupiter is over in Cancer, sign of the protector, in the first house. So he says, when I, first house, actualize, this is the instinct of survival, actualization, being in a body, as a healer and a philosopher, if I cultivate an appearance and an expression of a philosopher of healing, he's walking around like, I'm cultivating the actualization of philosophical healing. Then, it will start to have ramifications over here, ricochet effect, back and forth. And then Saturn's over here in Capricorn, in his own sign, just like Katie has it, but Katie's down here, in the seventh house. So, you have a sense of like, when I take responsibility and learn how to experience the beauty of solitude within a relationship, which a lot of people like, you can be alone with someone? Yeah. You have to learn to be okay with your aloneness before this seventh house really takes care of itself and matures into this beautiful thing. And so there's this Capricornian commitment to society. These two planets are about cultural establishment cycles, right? And so you're speaking to the culture, Mercury, communication, blah, 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 blah. From the depths, right? Oh, fifth house. So it's from the fifth house, which is the depths too, because this whole part of the chart over here is the yin sector. This is the yang sector up here. My symbol for yang and yin. Let me start going this way. Oh, things are descending. Things are going down. Oh, okay. So we got yang still. The sun's still up, but it's descending. So we got some yin. And then over here it's like, oh, look, it's dark midnight time. It's totally the end of the yin. But things are turning. The turning point has come. So it's still yin. But we got a little yang going on. No sunrise. So this is how you can think of the four quadrants of the chart. Yeah. Anyway, this is the yin side of the chart. This is the yang side of the chart. This is the yang upper half. This is the yin lower half. That's where you can get all these segments. But anyway, Mercury's working from the fifth house, which is the middle section over there. And it has to do with creativity. So Mercury, the planet of communication, is in the fifth house of productivity, creativity, and play. This is the house of enjoyment and recreation. So he's trying to master a communication of spontaneity and play. And through the sign of Libra, the artist, it's like, and trying to channel that into structures in relationships and himself, he's like, and me, so I can be a teacher and bring about a healing through these stories, you know, and the wisdom that's coming from Capricorn. So it's an interesting dynamic you got going on here.
Yeah.
So, see, like, if I was in high school and some teacher was writing this on the board, I'd have been like totally enthralled. I'd be like,
yeah,
dude,
right?
Why didn't we learn this? Instead, we had to learn, like, okay, find the integral. Or, you know, like, boring. Although, like, sometimes we'd be finding the, like, asymptote of the high, the funnel going to infinity, and I'd be, like, standing in the back, and he'd be like, it's a funnel, and he would be like, so basically what that means is that you can, the surface area is infinite, but the volume, based on this equation, and the volume is finite, you know? And I'd be sitting in the back, and I'd just stand up in the middle of class and be like, that's like a black hole! Look! This mathematics proves that the surface area is infinite and it stretches throughout the universe connecting other black holes, but the volume is finite, we can go through it! And then I would sit back down and start running and be like, what? Who are you? But the math teacher was right there, he's like, you got it! It was funny. So, you gotta just get what you can out of the education system. That's what I realized. I realized, like, they think they're using me, but I'm really here to use this. And that's what I realized in college. I was like, wow, I can learn anything I need to learn. I don't even need to go to class. So I dropped out with a 4.0 in astrophysics. And then just went to class anyway. And they're like, are you signed up to this? No, I'm just auditing the class. And I just worked about stuff in the corner. And I had three notebooks. I was like, this is for my theories and writings and metaphysics. This is for my fantasy novels and my worlds and my dreams and my characters and everything. So I got to give all my fantasy characters and my novels, like, charts. Oh, this character has Mercury and Aries. We'll give him a a distinct dialogue that's very aggressive, you know? So you like create characters, and then I had another notebook, and the teacher's like, what's that one for? I'm like, that one's in case you say anything interesting. You know? So, yeah, we got lots of beauty, beautiful charts here. But when you look at the, just the seven traditional planets, things get really clear. You know, it's like, wow, look at that. You can see that that T-square is still there. So a lot of times, like, people live these really intense lives, and then when you put the metaphysical planets, like Uranus, Neptune, Pluto in, suddenly there's, like, these beautiful trines come in, and it's all, like, glorious. And it's like almost they have angels watching over them. But then some people start off with conflict, like this guy. No, I'm just kidding. He has a good trine here between Venus and Jupiter. The goddess of love in Scorpio transformation and Jupiter in Cancer.
What do you think about aspects to the midheaven or the ascendant?
I would rather look at aspects to the planets that govern them.
Oh, yeah.
Because I find that, like, any aspect to your Mercury, because Mercury shapes your ascendant, since Mercury is associated with the sign Gemini, and I'm using the term guidance, Mercury guides the sign of Gemini and the sign of Virgo. Because in the ancient world, the sun governed Leo and moon guided Cancer. And Mercury is the next planet out from the sun, going out in little layers, govern these two, Mercury. And then you go up to the next planet, Venus governed Libra and Taurus, the gardener and the lover. And you keep going, oh. Because, you know, Taurus is about money, values, resources, nature. They say women invented agriculture from guys who were out hunting. They just dropped some seeds and said, look, it's kind of like us having babies. Put a seed in, give it some water, we got a plant. The guy comes home with, like, his hunt, here's a deer. The lady's like, I already got potatoes, stew going on, what you talking about? Anyway, Libra's about artistry, social knowledge, and codifying that knowledge. So you can imagine, the guys are out hunting, right? I'm talking all these stories, they came home and tell the stories around a campfire, and the women are listening and going, hey, let's write that down. Let's remember that. Well, how about, you know, so Venus, you can tell, Venus has to do with social knowledge and Taurian agriculture, nature cycles. But Mars, the masculine planet, has to do with Aries, competition, sports, you know, and Scorpio, death and rebirth, you know? Like Eomer says to Eowyn in Lord of the Rings, war is the province of men. She ends up killing the Dark Lord, or the evil undead rider. But anyway, maybe she was a warrior woman, like you guys. So, but then, yeah, Scorpio, look, in the ancient times, spring would come, and what happened? Roman empires would march to war! And their war season went to Scorpio. And then ended right here. That's when they ended. They're like, alright, let's chill. Time to go make some stories up about this. Remember that bear I killed? And then all the Sagittarius stories yelling after around the fire. But the main thing is, I would, like, if here's your midheaven, Pisces, anything aspecting Jupiter is going to be really strong. The reason why I don't like aspects to the ascendant and midheaven, is first of all, it reveals a patriarchal masculine bias of our culture. Because we only focus on the midheaven and the ascendant. Me and my career. As opposed to my home and family and relationships. So all the books that focus on aspects to the midheaven, I'm like, what about aspects to neighbor? If it's aspect to the midheaven, it's aspect to the neighbor as well. And you don't even talk about that. So I feel like if it's aspecting both of them, it's really a double aspect, and it's not really an aspect, it's something else. And it's not even to a point, or it's to a mathematical point and not a planet. So I'm like, man, if Mercury governs your ascendant, which shows how you appear, and you have Mercury in Libra, graceful, harmonic, balanced person, looking a little bit knightly and noble because it's in the fifth house of Leo, I'm like, hey, look, Mercury squared Jupiter brings in the Jupiter essence, the philosopher, the traveler. There's something multicultural and foreign about your appearance. And then Mercury Square Saturn says, ah, but there's wisdom. Little goatee. He's like, let me think about things. I'm a person of wisdom. And there's a goatly pan playing his pipes, you know, a Capricornian thing going on. So, so the aspects for Mercury to the planets, or the aspects to the planet that govern your ascendant, are shaping things in a more dramatic way than, say, just the sun and the moon aspecting the midheaven. I would trust the aspects to the planet that governs it more than the actual to it, because I mean there is an effect, but it's not as strong because it's split by two. you know, because you always got two. Because this is aspecting that angle, it's aspecting that angle. So it's a weak influence compared to the actual aspects of the planet. Like for me, for instance, I have Jupiter ruling my ascendant, because I'm the opposite side of you. So you're Gemini rising, skinny guy, I'm Sagittarius, and I'm a big horse. Big legs like a horse. I'm like, whoo! Sometimes I go running at the gym, and I go, take a man your horse and run. I start making horsey sounds on the treadmill, people look at me like, what's wrong with this guy? So I'm going to, my head's going up and down, I'm like, anyway, I said, I'm taking my inner horse for a run. You got to embody your archetype, you know? So anyway, so I'm Sag rising, governed by Jupiter. Look at Jupiter. Jupiter's conjunct Mars, the warrior, and Neptune, the great mystic, in the 12th house of integration and dreams. That's why I do this poetic spiritual astrology. But, thing is, since Jupiter governs my body, like, in the morning when I first wake up, I hit Mars. Like, Mars is there. So, like, in the morning I feel really, like, warrior, like, tight, rah! But then by night, I'm like a big blob. I must have drank a big water today. I feel like it's blobby away. So the planet that governs my, the way I actualize my body, on one hand has a Mars influence of the warrior, rah! And the next is Neptune, like the dreamer, floating off into fantasy world. See, I might see repainting my fantasy world right now. So, yeah. It's interesting the way we look, you know. So if we look at, go down the list here, Katie, she's got Libra rising. Usually Libra rising have, like, dimples. They look balanced and harmonious in some way. Yeah.
Yeah,
dimples. Oh, yeah. That's a classic sign of Libra rising, the dimples. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. They're sweet. Sweet as pie. Libra
rising. So mostly they're your rising?
Yeah, the rising sign. Oh, it shows how you look. It's your appearance. Yeah.
There's some variations.
Yeah, modified by the planet that governs it. Look at Venus. Venus is in Aries, conjunct the sun. So she's going to have a solar influence, being like a queen. And then she's going to have, you know, fire. The big hair. Yeah, the fire. And the Aries is the warrior. So she's going to have this, like, sort of like fiery expression of Libra rising. For each person, like if someone had Libra rising with Venus and Scorpio down in the second house, they're like mystery. You know, brings in scorpionic, sexy, second house, sensual Taurus. You know, they're like really beautiful, sensual, like, and like, you can just feel like this person's deep, because Venus is in Scorpio. Whereas Venus and Sag, they're like hit you in the arm, like, ha ha, and they're like, you know, they're more jovial, you know, the jovial character of Sagittarius. So basically, there's 12 different kinds of Libra risings, and because like Chad was saying, there's layers. Venus is over here in Aries, but it's conjunct the sun. So there's like a sunny. So having Venus conjunct the sun will make you kind of Leo rising, you know? But you already have a Leo moon, so we kind of feel that already anyway in you. That kind of like nobility and a sense of, you know, playfulness, creativity, fun. Let's have a party. The two signs of partying, Leo and Libra, are like strong in your chart. You're like, hey, can we celebrate something? Bring everybody together, yeah. And then your Aries there, so you're the first one to get drunk and go, woohoo! We're all together celebrating. That's funny. But you have a deep mind, you know. Your Mercury's in Taurus, so it's harder for you to learn things like the average person, because Mercury's in Taurus. Taurus is the sign of agriculture and nature. It wants to go slow. Cows have four stomachs; they like to digest stuff. So your brain has four stomachs. Mercury's in Taurus, going, I have cow mind. So basically, I know, you're like, I just sit back and watch, and everybody else has got it, and they've already left, and they already know how to, but then later, they forget, they don't get it. You watch it, and then like, you're like, whoa, Mercury, perception. Takes your time, but once you got it, bam, it's locked in strong. You ask those other guys, what did you see, what did you perceive when you went through that, on that trip? And like, oh, there's some mountains over there, you know, and it was beautiful. You're like, oh, there were these trees with these interesting textures. You know, it's a more sensual kind of mind learning. And it's in the 8th house, so it's deep, deep research mind. You know? So you're like, I can ferret out information. And I'm stubborn about it, because my Mercury's in Taurus. It's a stubborn communicator. You're like, here's where it is. So, you know, just that piece is important, having Mercury in Taurus. Because most Arieses who think like, oh, Aries are like, light speed, charge! You're like, wait, I got to think about it. It's going to take some time. And they're like, what? Kind of Aries are you? Yeah. I'm going to take my time and think about it, Aries. But then your Mars is in Gemini. So when you get to Gemini, when you get to Mars things, like taking action and going for it, Mars is in Gemini, which makes you very like elfin and pure and into a sense of like, let's think about the ideas of this thing. And Gemini is about the storyteller, so Mars is in the sign of the storyteller. Like right here in this book, I broke each side down and said, when Mars is in the sign of the storyteller, you have the... right here. With the mind... oh, that's the mind. With the will of the scribe, the storyteller, the intellectual, the teacher, you are challenged to assert your knowledge. You get that? Assert, Mars, your knowledge, Gemini. You want to know things badly and have an aggressive, restless mind. Can you direct energy and willpower into understanding and teaching in the realm of experience Mars occupies? The ninth house of the teacher. The ninth house governs foreign philosophy and teaching and higher education. So having Mars in a very educated sign, Gemini, and in the mutable house, ninth house, like, you got teacher energy about you. But it's more about community, because in terms of your calling, because the moon governs the career, you got the healer on the side of the career at the top. And when you have the mother, the great mother at the top, it's like your calling is about nurturing something. And the moon's in Leo in the 11th house saying, hey, let's teach people how to play and celebrate community. And then it says, you are called to be a motivational networker. Because you're Mars, motivational, Gemini, networker. Everything connects together. And it says, your sexual desire is stimulated by verbal interchange and thought, but is not likely to stay focused. You're like, what was that word you just used? The guy's like, you're indefatigable. You're like, oh, let's go again. That was a good word. How can you be decisively flexible and verbally assertive without offending others with your cool logic? A man with Mars in Gemini expresses intelligence and a curious masculine, and curious masculinity, and may have incredible physical as well as mental dexterity, because Gemini is very dexterous. A woman will be attracted to people who are lively, clever, talkative, and intelligent. Because, you know, Mars in a woman's chart shows what you desire in the masculine. Mm-hmm. And so when it's in ninth house Gemini, you're like, I want a smart foreigner. I want a philosopher who's intelligent.
My boyfriend's from Ghana.
Oh, yeah? There you go. Is he smart? Is he tricky?
He's really intelligent.
Yeah, because Gemini is the deceptive, or not deceptive, that's more Pisces. The
last one was a poet, too, so tricky. He uses words.
Oh, yeah, words, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, the poet, yeah. Uh-huh.
Is he? Oh, yeah, he's Taurus.
Yeah, the funny thing is you can go through a list of everybody you've been with, major relationship, and go, what are all the common themes? And then you start to see a theme emerge. And I'll just give you the shortcut.
Cool.
The shortcut is take your traditional chart, the seven traditional planets, and just use the medieval planets. There's the seven traditional planets. Okay, and imagine that every planet is in its opposite sign. So, for instance, this is called the polarity chart. So imagine if you were Virgo rising, sign of the herbalist, the yoga teacher, the sacred servant. Imagine if your Mars was in Pisces, the will of the poet. Imagine if your Sun was in Aries, so you're like walking the path of light bearer, the motivator, like her. And then your Moon's in Libra. Like, Moon in Libra. So these are just opposite right here. Imagine Venus in Aries. Imagine Jupiter in Scorpio, philosophy of mystery. And imagine that mind of the detective, researcher, investigator, that's the therapist over here in Scorpio in the 8th house. Imagine it's in Taurus. Simplicity of just being, enjoying a cup of tea and food. You know, so imagine all these. Saturn is in over here in Gemini. Instead of being focused on the big picture, you got this like focus on mastering the details of knowledge. Anyway, that's your polarity chart, where you reverse everything in the chart. Mm-hmm. And what happens with that is, like, you tend to attract people that have that kind of, those kinds of vibrations. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, oh. Because they are symbolic of what you are on the opposite. Like, we're all coins, and you're, the other side of the coin is your polarity chart. Mm-hmm. So everything opposite from what you are. And, like, for instance, in my chart, I have Sagittarius rising with a Gemini moon. And my first wife had a Sagittarius moon right here. And I was like, wow. We were like traveling companions and went around the world with backpacks. You know? I was like, cool. So, I attracted her because I'm Sagittarius rising, so my opposite of me would be Sagittarius moon. She has Sagittarius moon. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like we attract these people into our lives so we can learn about ourselves. And they can learn about themselves. And everybody can grow towards holism. Who's that? What?
Oh, nothing.
Oh. Okay. So,
Da Vinci attract? No. See, Da Vinci was Sagittarius rising. Which he was the model for the Renaissance man. Mm-hmm. Think of Sagittarius rising, a sign of like multiculturalism, higher education, universities, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, he's the Renaissance man, 11 degrees. It's funny, that's where the fixed star on Terry's is, the Heart of the Scorpions. He was like, obsessive Renaissance man.
He must have been a big dude.
Yeah. Sag rising, Taurus, mountain man. Yeah. Combine all that together, you guys, you're quite a big guy. So that's the polarity chart. It's fun to work with, because it's like, if you can see your patterns, you can go, oh, this is why I'm attracting people like that. Because if you have, say, Venus in Libra, that's one thing. But if you have Mars in Virgo, like in a woman's chart, Mars in Virgo, you're going to be attracted to Virgo-type people. Zen masters, mentors, yoga teachers, herbalists, healers, people who are sacred servants and have devotion to their craft, craftsmen. But really, it's because you really want to understand your inner craftsman. Mm-hmm. This is your Mars. Mm-hmm. So you can project it onto someone else. Like with your Mars in the seventh house, you can project Mars anger issues and Sun ego issues onto your partners. You're so angry and egotistical. Why are you so frustrated? You're like, oh, I'm just projecting my old stuff onto them. I need to own my Mars.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So if you own your Mars and become a warrior of love, you know, seventh house, if you become a pioneer and channel that frustration into action, and then channel that egotism of the Sun into centeredness, you know, centration, then you have a sense of like, yes, my life is about being with others, even though I have this struggle over here with this Aries moon that says, you need to be independent and free and don't listen to nobody. And you're like, wait, over half of me needs to listen to somebody. Maybe even more than half. I got Mars over here too. Mars is like the henchman of the first knight of the Sun. So the Sun is like the king, and Mars is like the first knight that goes out and does the will of the king, you know? So if you think of this in medieval architects, fantasy architects, Venus is the princess. She's like, hi, how's everyone doing? Your princess in the 8th house. She's like, I am the queen of the underworld. She lives down in the dungeon here, you know? She's like, I like it in the dungeon. It's cooler. You know, there's books down there from ancient times. I can learn about deep mysteries of life, because Mercury's in there. You know? But for the most part, Venus and Mars are our love planets, and Venus is the urge to love and the need for affection, and Mars is the urge to take action and need for drive, competitive, fierce warrior energy. You know? We all have all these parts of this. The key is how we're using them. And then when they move around the chart, we're like, whoa. Because if you look, Mars is in Virgo. So Mars has been retrograding in Virgo for like since November, December, so it's like been sitting in the sign for 7 months. When it usually spends 7 weeks per sign. Mm. So if you go back, look, it went all the way up to 22. It came into Virgo around, you know, November, and then it stayed there. 1, 2, 3, we're retrograde, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
What does that mean?
So here it comes in June, it's gonna finally pass your descendant again. So the descendant right here, this is the ascendant, this is the descendant. So Mars came into your descendant last November and said, hey, it's time to start a fire and launch aggression and war in the house of love. So I would be surprised if we went through an intense breakup, you know, because Mars came in and said, rah! And then you did, but Mars is about doing things. And when it goes retrograde, it's about redoing things. It's like, you're redoing your house of relationships here, your experience of love. So they went backwards, you know, and now it's moving forward. So basically June, the day will be right there, June 17th. Mars is coming across your seventh house. So if you find yourself in a conflict with another, an intimate, whether it's a friend, business partner, lover, you're like, oh, I'm using my Mars wrong. Because I'm not supposed to be. The shadow side of Mars is aggression and war and battle and fighting and conflict. And sometimes we need that to grow. But then the positive side is like, you know, hey, I'm being a pioneer. I'm an initiator. So it's a strong time to initiate. And you got Mars coming up on Mars. See? Mars return. Right there. Mars return happens every 2 years. The first time it happens, you're two, and you just throw a tantrum. You're like, I don't know what's coming through me, but it's intense and hot and fierce, and I need to
and holler and bang stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you're just like, you don't know how to like, deal with it, you know? And you're like, wow. And then, you know, next one at 4 gets a little better, and then 6, you know, we go through these things. But even as adults, we have Mars returns. And so we get fevers, we get hots, we know we need to take action. So it's like, rah. So it's like resetting Mars energy within us, which has to do with drive, sexuality, motivation, you know. So Mars returns are good for just empowering you, you know. So on June 29th, you can be like, I'm empowered. Mars return. Go. And,
Mark that day down.
Yeah. June. But it's in the house of love. So it's like, what's the old saying? Make love, not war. Because Mars is there trying to make some war. Yeah, Mars likes to fight. God of war. But he likes some bloodshed. But the thing is, on the battlefield, before he was a great warrior on the battlefield, when he's a little guy, they actually trained him in the arts of dance. So you can imagine Mars, a little dance outfit, going, learning how to move. It's like, I'm learning ballerina. Jupiter's like, good job, Mars, good job. You know, Hera's like, you're such a beautiful son. And then Mars's like, get me out of these fucking tights. You know? You know, anyway, so Mars's like, I can't wait to get to the battlefield. You know, when he went to the battlefield, he just took the dancing arts and just took it into his warrior. All these things we see in movies today. Mars is like, sitting back going, I inspired that. That movie 300. Sparta! That's total of ours. You know? The diplomats come to negotiate, he kicks him into the pit. You know. So, anyway, we got to be careful of Mars, because Mars can burn us, see? Just as it can burn someone else. But Mars is Hellenistically a dry planet, you know. When you look at the axis of alchemy, you have two things. You have hot planets that like to raise energy, and cold planets, which likes to lower the energy. So this is a rest state, maximum potential energy. This is kinetic energy. This is maximum things are moving. So this is inspiration. I guess the word would be energizing. So hot planets energize. And then you have the moist, moist, dry axis. I would say the Greeks were very Taoist. Because they just looked at nature and said, look, it's wet out today and hot. Oh, it's cold and moist. Okay. So, you know, they just looked at nature and formed this model. The elements came out of this. We'll get to that. But there were four elements, fire, earth, air, water. But the moist and the dry were actually levels of granularity. So moist stuff mixes well. Like sand is very moist, even if it's not wet. So don't think of moist like wet. Just like don't think of these as temperature. Think of these as energy in the system. And dry is very like granular in a big sense. Like bowling balls would be dry compared to sand. You know, bowling balls are like big things that don't mix very well. But sand, so when you put the planets in the schema, you get the sun is over here, and the moon is over here. And Jupiter's over here, and Saturn's over here. The reason why, because the moon is cold, it likes to go into rest state, like at night when it's time to come home and go to sleep and dream. The moon's all about dreams. And then way before Neptune came along, the moon always covered dreams. Imagine that. So planets over here like to rest. And then Venus was always here. They always put Venus on the cusp. Which is funny because like, Venus, the goddess of love, is very super moist. So moist things are about inclusivity. Right? And emergence. Things are emerging together. So it's about including things. It's about connection. Right? Because if things are moist, there's a connection. If you come up to someone and they're very dry, they're like, get away. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, there's like, what are you so dry about? So this is about disconnection. Because things connect and things disconnect. Not like a negative thing. Politically correct term for this would be about making distinctions. I am me and you are you. Stay over there. Distinctions. Forming distinctions, right? Or this is like bringing things together. This is separating things. It happens in nature all the time. It rains, all the mud mixes, it gets hot and sunny, the dry sun parches the earth, and everything dries up and becomes little pieces of dirt clods. You know? So it's just a natural process. So Mars was always put over here with the sun, but distinctly above the line. Mars don't go below the line. How can Mars, the god of fire and heat and war, be cold? You know? See, Venus is like, and this is the difference between males and females. This is huge. Because Venus can go down here into rest state, like, oh, let's rest and enjoy the pleasures of life. Everybody has a Venus. I'm not just talking about males and females. But Venus can also be hot. She's like dressed up at the party. You know? It's like, I can energize, you know? It's usually when a man meets a woman and they're at this level that then they polarize, and then the woman becomes the mother and the Mars becomes the father, and they polarize right here. Because men have this other, and Mars in general is about making distinctions and competition and being dry and energizing things. So Jupiter is very interesting here. Jupiter's always seen as the planet of opportunity. They never tell you why in the books. Why? Because it's hot and it's moist. It likes to make connections instead of forming distinctions. And it likes to raise the energy. So if a planet comes along in your chart and it's raising the energy and making more connections, there's going to be a lot of opportunities going on. It's like, oh, connections are happening at a high level. Whereas Saturn's over here saying, connections are happening at a low level. Because Saturn's saying, hey, go inward, alone time, solitude. So Saturn's the planet of breaking connections. Hence Saturn on your Venus right now. It's like, what old values are you still attached to that need to go bye-bye? Especially the 8th house of letting go. Because Venus is about attachment, but the 8th house is about detachment, and Saturn's about breaking connections and going inward and finding some solitude and being okay with that. And so that's a pretty powerful trend. So like, for instance, when Saturn squares the moon, Saturn's dryness will cancel the moon's moistness. The moon's over here. And then you're left with double cold. And so during a Saturn-moon transit, you just feel like your heart's frozen. You go into grief state. It's like, oh, why am I depressed? So in this society, you go to the doctor, they put you on Prozac, and you miss an opportunity to transform the grief into joy and make friends with the unknown and go through the whole process. You know? So the ancients said, hey, you need to go to the edge of the village and bleed. You need to get out of here and like have some alone time with God. So Saturn moon were times where melancholia was a societally accepted thing. Like, hey, you're having a time where you need to go into your alone time and get right with the divine, you know? Like in Aborigine culture, they went on a walkabout. They take whatever you need to survive, get the hell out of the village, because you are out of balance, homie. And they would go out in nature and be like, Crocodile Dundee, you know, walking around. And they'd be like, oh, I feel good again. But by myself, I have time to think it over. Yeah. So, so that's fascinating that, you know, these are called qualities. And the elements came out of this. Oh, Mercury's always at the center. Because Mercury, Nabu, Hermes, he cannot be attached to one side because he's the messenger. So the messenger has an agenda, he won't be a good messenger. He's like, I'm kind of biased towards. And actually, Mercury is kind of biased towards these two. Earthy and airy. So he governs an air sign and an air sign. But, in general, Mercury is the intelligent messenger at the center of the diagram and says, hey, I can be anything. I can bring you a message about inclusivity. Let's make an alliance. Form a treaty. Or I can bring a message of, we're breaking up. Or I can bring a message of, raise the energized, get energized. You know, when you get a message, you get an email that makes you excited, that's Mercury doing hot. Something that hits you right in the gut, you're like, ooh, I need to rest. That message was intense. So Mercury's in the middle of the diagram and tries to stay neutral. But he's tricky. You know, watch out. and then when you put the elements, the water element came from cold becoming moist. So actually water is defined as the rest state energy moving into the moist connective energy. You can feel that with water. You know? So the ancient Greeks envisioned water, the element of water. And then when things got moist and then the heat came in, the water would what? Evaporate into air. We had the air element, you know? So air is defined as moistness and inclusivity coming into energize. People are talking, ideas are being shared. This is the mental element. Water is the emotional element. Look where the moon is down here. And Jupiter, people think of Jupiter as a fiery planet. It actually governs a fiery sign, Sagittarius, hot sign, and a moist sign, Pisces, right? Wet. But together, those make air. And Jupiter, Jupiter means father, pater of the Jew, the sky. So Jupiter is the most airy planet of all planets. It's a planet of education, higher philosophy, multiculturalism, thinking in big picture. So Jupiter is like philosophy right here, love of wisdom. So air element's here. Anyway, you go over here, you get hot. Hot becoming dry was fire. Start a fire, watch how it dries stuff out. Yeah. Teapots start to crack. So fire element is hot becoming dry. Things are energizing, but they're also about to disconnect and form distinctions and be dry. Yeah. I have like 12 keywords for each of these in my new book that I'm writing called The Tao of Astrology. This is the essential focus of the Tao of Astrology, because it's very Taoist. Like, hey, things flow in natural cycles. You know? So, anyway, when you get down this way, you get Earth. Saturn, Lord of the Earth. Remember Saturn down in Tartarus, hanging out with this guy? He's still got his guy that he used to castrate Uranus. Hanging out at the end of the road. Earth. Earth is dry, becoming cold. Because Earth is very, wants to chill. Earth is very sensual. Wants to eat some food and just feel relaxed, you know? Earth just wants to sit there. And it's dry. Earth is dry. So dry becoming cold. If you get your hands on some Earth, it gets cold down there. The underworld. That's what the ancients saw. The underworld is cold. In other words, the Greek version of hell was very hot. very cold. Not hot. Christians made it hot. But the old hell used to be pretty cold. Because it was Hades, Lord of the Underworld, where people would go to be shades. They were ghosts walking around, So this is the old thing. Now you put the modern planets in here, you get Uranus is up here. Robert Hand in the lecture said Uranus would be hot and dry, planet of traumas, revolution, because it raises energy and it breaks connections. Like right now with your Uranus on your moon sign. But now it's like you're having this inspiring, energizing thing, but it's like you need to break connections with your family, with your heart, with your emotional attachments. Because Uranus is like, how can we be independent and authentic? Like, true to myself, So yeah, that's that Uranus stream of total... If you think about distinction being I want to be my authentic self. This would be authenticity. Especially when it's hot, when it's energized, inspired, uplifted, as opposed to rest, cold, sleepy, dreamy. You get to the moon, it's very sleepy, dreamy. That's why Neptune would be over here. Neptune would be super sleepy, dreamy. Because Neptune's the planet of ocean and imagination and dreams. So it would definitely be in this sector down here with the moon. And hence, Neptune governing dreams, that kind of thing, visionary imagination. It starts with the moon. The moon is the perceptual imagination. In India, they call the moon manas, which means mind. But that's not what they mean. They don't mean mind, intellect. They mean the perceptual imagination that takes things in and stores them in your soul, which they call the storehouse of treasures. So, if you look at that, that's why people that have trauma, they're in a war and they see people getting legs chopped off, they take that in their soul. It's like a nutrient. Ooh, that's a bad nutrient. Now I gotta have PTSD walk around and somebody slams the door and I'm like, ah! It's that moon memorizes. Memory comes from the moon. Mom. Moon. Mem. In Hebrew. Mem. So, these are the Hebrew letters. The Aleph, which is the air, divine mind. And the fire will be the Sheen. And Earth is the critical point where all the divine elements come together in form. So, Pluto would be under Mercury. So if you imagine Pluto's behind the board, behind the wall, under Mercury. Pluto, because Pluto is just like Mercury. Remember, Mercury is the only god that could go down into the underworld and come back unscathed. He had wing boots. Pluto's got the helm of invisibility. He'd be unseen. So Pluto, which is, you know, body, mind, spirit. I mean, it's the Phoenix rising out of the ashes. Whereas Mercury is different. Mercury's got, I have a cross of matter, but I'm working through spirit, and I'm bringing this receptivity dish. It's like my little thinking gap. Mercury's got his thinking gap going, let's think about this stuff. It's like Venus with a thinking cap. they work together. You get a woman that has her Venus conjunct Mercury, she's very Athena-like in her connection, in her archetypes, because Athena was the goddess of wisdom and craft. So, anyway, Pluto's here. Transformation. So, because, you know, Pluto can do the same. Pluto can play all the games. Pluto can be moist, intense, in connection, like sexuality. Pluto can be hot. It can be inspiring and be intense and passionate. It can be dry. It can break connections. It's the planet of death. It's pretty dry. It can be cold. Rest. Bring things to a standstill. For you're going through a Pluto transit. You're like there for 3 years going through this transit going, why is everything so still? And then, of course, there's actually another force called Ceres out between Mars and Jupiter. She's the grain goddess. She would be above Mercury. I used to try to ascribe Ceres to down here. It's very motherly, nurturing, grain goddess. But then I was reading Homer in the Iliad, and he was saying things like, Ceres is the bringer of seasons! And everything I learned about Ceres made me think that she can do all these. Because, you know, this is winter. This is spring. This is summer. This is fall. I was like, yes, Ceres has a definite connection to spring and the harvest. But also winter. She's the one that brought the winter. When they took her daughter, she's like, winter will come over the land. Yeah. And then hot, summer, when everything's like growing. So I was like, man, Ceres is just opposite from Pluto. So Ceres would be above the board. Pluto's under Mercury and other side of this wall. Ceres is out here. Because look, in mythology, Ceres opposed Pluto. Pluto stole her daughter. He abducted Persephone. And Ceres is like, bring my daughter back or I'm killing everybody. And so, Ceres is like, and then you can see the symbol, you know, the four elements, and then the arc of consciousness. So it's like consciousness rising out of the four elements. Plus, it looks like a grain, you know, sky, cut the grain. So it's like, wow, Ceres, the grain goddess. So these are all the planets fit into this whole model. So when you look at planets moving around the chart, did we move this? Display points. This. So yeah, you have. Let's start with Pluto. Pluto's on your Neptune. It's been there for a couple years, because you know, because Pluto moves 248 years around. Mm. So it's gonna be forever for it to go around a chart. You won't be here before it gets back where it was when you were born. Yeah. But you can see that the last 2 years, 2010 is at 4, 2006, so it's right on it all through 2011, right when you're going through all that stuff. So Pluto is bringing its great underworld transformation, you know, bringing all four qualities to Neptune. What's Neptune? Spiritual realization, water, dreams. Imagination, like Neptune is your spiritual path. So you've been having a great transformation of your spiritual path. Mm-hmm. And it's altering the way you're going to be in your vocation. Because mm-hmm. the houses are the stages of life. So we're like, where's this happening in your life? Oh, it's going to affect your vocation. Mm-hmm. So it's all 10th houses. And then when you go look at other things, like if you go here to now, this is now, this is what Uranus has been crossing your moon. Okay, here's the moon. It's all watery, and I want things to be safe and nurturing, right? And Uranus is saying, BAM! Lightning bolt! Fire! Trouble! And it's like, if you're with the program, if you're like open to change, and you're like, I'm into feeling unpredictable. I'm into the unusual. Things like metaphysics and astrology, your soul's open to those things. Uranus is like, okay, she's good. I don't need to hurt her. But I'm still going to shock the hell out of her, you know, because look, that's my job. I am fire, I am Prometheus, stealing the sacred fire from the gods and giving it to you. What, you don't want it? Okay. Lightning bolts, fire, steam. So you know, it's like Uranus, that's his job. He's here to disconnect you from old emotional patterns and family related stuff. You know, we grow up within a family, we learn that here we are in this family, we take on their values. You know, we have an experience, and then that experience becomes a memory lodged in our depths. We're like trees growing in layers, storing memories. And then these little memory clusters get together and they form beliefs. And then these beliefs get together, and these beliefs are charged with values and meaning. And then suddenly these beliefs start to get together, and they start to form attitudes, and attitudes of the emotion goes from the core out. It's like, you know, like trees. You get knots, and when it crosses over these old knots, their attitudes, it just plays those like a musical instrument. Here comes the wave of emotion, and you get somebody who's so irritable and so like disgruntled, and that's their attitude, because they have these beliefs that the world sucks, and they have this attitude that I'm just going to be a grumpy old person, and then like suddenly their emotion just plays that like a musical instrument coming forth to the ego, which is kind of like the outer, like the bark is the body, this tree, and the ego is like the phloem in the tree with a photosynthesis comes down, and then you have this. So here, this is the xylem right here, where all the water comes into the tree from the roots. So your roots, your family, are the first people to give you these memories, and then lodge you with these beliefs, and give you these attitudes. You know? Like my three brothers were like, Kelly, you are from another planet. You are strange. What are you doing acting so hyper? And I was like, so right away my brothers like kind of applauded me for it. So I got positive memory from being weird and different. So I tried to be more weird and different because, you know, that was my thing as a kid. But I got to school and people said, why are you being so weird and different and hyper? And they tried to ostracize me for it. I said, not only am I weird and different, I'm happy about it. I'm going to shock you with it. So I was like, okay with being strange, you know, being an Aquarian. And so I would like, made it my job to shock people. And in my moon and Gemini, I used to write down jokes in the summer, pranks and things. I'd be like, here's what I'm going to do to shock people and awaken them. And a whole notebook full of stuff. But yeah, so your attitudes are formed strong. And the needs become govern behavior. You want to talk about psychotherapy, this is the process right here. And we're like trees growing one ring per year. And
so Pluto is squaring the moon?
Yeah, Pluto's squaring the moon. That's the other part is this last 2 years Pluto has been squaring the moon. So this whole 60s unfoldment that's happening in the world, Uranus square Pluto, because when they were together last, they were in Virgo in 1965, 64, 65, 66, with the civil rights movement. Revolution! Transformation! Flower of the bee here now! Flower children generation, Virgo! Let's have herbalism and everybody grow their hair long and look like Jesus. Because Jesus was born in the sign of Virgo. Even though the Christians try to put him in December, it's like, come on, he's a Virgo. Anyway... with the cancer rising, the great evil. But anyway, moon is being squared by Pluto. Yeah, so yeah, this is definitely an emotion. This you're coming out of, emerging from this time of intense spiritual transformation and realization about your vocation. But in that comes dramatic change in your soul and becoming walking your authentic path, Uranus moon, and emotional catharsis and letting go of all these old layers that aren't serving you anymore. Mm-hmm. Does that relate to your process?
Yeah. Yeah. Perfectly. Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uranus comes from Ur, which in the old language, Uranus is the sky father. Uranus. You know, mm-hmm. But comes from the Hebrew Aleph and what's that one? Vav and Reish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A U R. So we get the word Ara from Ur. Mm-hmm. It means light. So this is the word for light. Mm-hmm. And when God said, let there be Ur. You know, because the ancient city that Abraham came from was called Ur, city of light, where astrology and all that was invented. But Aur, this word, Ur, you have, you know, the same root in Aurora, Aura,
right.
Uranus. So the thing is, in the Hebrew language, these letters are like symbols, like archetypes, like Venus. Like Aleph is the first letter, kind of like Alpha in Greek. It symbolizes nothing able to be anything, the infinite potential of the spirit. So that's like one of the big mother letters. And then the Vav, in the ancient language, is like a fertility. It's like God coming down and bringing fertility to the void. So that's like male phallus, in a sense. It's like, hey, here you go. We got fertility here for you. And then Reish, or whatever, this letter symbolizes manifestation in creation. So the word light has secret meaning planted within these letters. It meant spiritual potential fertilizing creation. That's what I saw. They were like, whoa. So when you look at, like, remember fire is that letter? So this word, oops. Is Shamesh, which is the sun. Shamesh. They got it from the Hebrews. Actually came from Sumerians. And the Sumerian word was Shamash, the sun god. And so this word is sun in Hebrew. But look, often they'll put three letters together and they'll have like a polarity between these two and something in the middle. So you have Sha and Sha, the two Sha sounds. Fire and fire. That sounds like a star to me, the sun. And at the center is Mem, which is actually water. Mem symbolizes the divine fountain of wisdom in the universe. The fabric, the patterns, the feminine. So when you have fabric, so you have at the center of every sun, this fabric pattern of life. Like Mem, the life-giving element, water. And you got hydrogen turning into helium. One, two. So yeah, hidden in the ancient language is a lot of wisdom. See, when you take the first line of the Bible apart like this, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. It actually says in poetic letters like this, it says, the first fruits of the Spirit aspiring to express eternity through a fountain of divine wisdom is the creation of the celestial dimensions of the manifest world. Takes a poet. You know, to really, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth sounds good, but doesn't sound as good as that other one. Yeah, so this is the alchemy of astrology. This is like how things move, you know. So yeah, when you got Mars coming in your seventh house, and you've had it since November, no wonder you're having a little bit of conflict in relationships because you're forming distinctions. I am me, you are you. Stay the heck away, I'm going to punch you. Oh, disconnection is happening. Yeah. Define who, your vibration, and Mars will be coming back on June 20th. When you look at planetary energies, they just go like that. No wonder you're learning a lot. Jupiter, the planet of increased opportunity through hot, energizing, inspired inspiration and, you know, upliftment, is connecting. And what is it doing? Third house, the brain. Third house is the house of the mind and learning. So yeah, everybody's got to be those. So yeah, that's the core of the system right there. Get that down and learn how to poeticize it. It's like, you can be a master scholar. It'll only take 30 years. So, Katie, do you want to look at any of your transits? Andrew, you've seen a lot of yours, right?
Yeah, I've been looking at mine for a while.
All right, and let's see here. I will. We've got a figure of that. Yeah, so she's got Pluto and Neptune too, but hers is coming up. So your whole generation is having Pluto and Neptune. That's a generational transit. The fact that it's squaring your moon and your rising on your moon, that's personal. Mm. That ain't happened to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she won't have her Uranus here, crossing her sun sign, the year that changes your life radically and just kind of shocks you onto a whole new path.
It's going to be a bit more than that. Venus is.
Yeah, and Venus is there too, yeah. Which you're going through right now. Uranus sun is 2017, so you know, be 26. So basically, Katie, you could say, hey, around 2017, May, looks like it would be 24, so yeah, sometime between April and May, is 25, right there, look at that. So right around April 25th, 2017, you're like, hey, that guy Kelly from way back said that my whole life is going to change this year. And look what house it's in, the seventh house. So this is the house of relationships and cooperation. So it's like, maybe you get married. So all up to you. You know, you have choice. That's the thing. Astrology doesn't predestine anything. It's about, hey, what do you want to do with it? Mm-hmm. You have free will to work within these patterns. Yes, you're destined and fated in some ways. You have certain color hair, certain color eyes, certain kind of cultural background, certain kind of situation on the earth. We're all born in the Roman Empire. We'd be citizens. You know, we're all born in the ancient Samaria. We'd be like, hey, let's do some agriculture. Invent some writing. You know, so we have cultural situations. So there's always these bigger layers. But in terms of what we're doing, when Uranus, planet of revolution, gets to your sun sign, the point of self-realization, it's time for like a revolution of self-realization. So whereas Gail's having it on the moon right now, so your heart is experiencing an authentic, like, how can I be true to my most authentic self? Because it's in the first house, right? So first you'd be like, how can I be true to my most authentic expression of relationships? Because it's your house of relationships over here. So, that's the stage. And, of course,
my chat said Venus is going to be invoked. Uranus on Venus and be like, a revolution of love. I'm gonna strive for more independence. Like a Venus and Aries couldn't get independent enough. No. Uranus comes around and says, okay, we're going to make things interesting and unique. And cosmic consciousness is going to be part of the equation. So you can study this astrology for a while, but then when Uranus comes across your Venus, you might go, ooh, I get it now. You know, it just kind of comes down.
I thought this was happening right now.
What? No, this is 2017.
I was like, holy shit, you're having a perfect conjunction.
No. This is later. We're skipping ahead. And then charts keep working after you're dead. You know, like Da Vinci's in the grave or whatever, but guess what's happening to his soul? he's having a new moon in his sixth house. He's like, maybe I should master some craft. That's what I'm doing right now. He's got Chiron on his moon. He's got Neptune on his Jupiter. Wow, Da Vinci's having Neptune cross his Jupiter. So, you know, they've tracked charts of dead people like, a Van Gogh painting will sell for millions of dollars. They look at Van Gogh's chart and say, wow, measure financial abundance. Long after you're dead. You know? So basically, like Maximus said in the movie Gladiator, what we do in life echoes through eternity. So, like, you know, the vibration you're putting out is a vibration. It might look like you're separate.
So do you think that your chart kind of, like, travels with you from life to life in a certain way?
A little bit. Because there's so many other things, you know, like when you get to a new planet or whatnot, there's going to be a culture, there's going to be a, you know, what their cycles are with their big planets. But yeah, I think that there's some, there's definitely a core of soul memory. But I'm also leaning towards more the theory of recycled being, like, basically all your parts that are in your chart kind of get recycled into the great cosmic soup. Mm-hmm. And then, like, for instance, Da Vinci, he was Sagittarius Rising, the Renaissance man. So now, everybody has Sagittarius Rising because of what Da Vinci did. They're tapping into that Renaissance energy. Like me, I have Sagittarius Rising. They're like, how do you do so many things? I'm a Renaissance man. I got 15 things going on. But yeah, Sagittarius is like that. And he was like that. But, you know, his Mars is in Aquarius, 16 degrees. My Sun's at 16 degrees Aquarius, 15. So I'm like, oh, wow. I really relate to how Da Vinci was. And you probably do too with your Mars in Aquarius. Hey, I can engineer a catapult with the king and get paid to do my art on the side. That sounds fun. But the thing is I don't relate to his Venus Sun. You know, I'm like, what? Taurus? Venus? I don't know. Whatever. I don't want to paint Mona Lisa's. I'd rather paint, like, weird abstract things floating in space. But, you know, but everybody's different. So I think that what happens is when we die, our parts, symbolized by the planets, get recycled into the great cosmic soup. And when the divine wants to create another being, it says, hey, let's take part of, like, you know, Andrew's Mercury, Kelly's Venus, Einstein's Pluto, and Hitler's Moonside, and throw it all together and see what happens next. I don't think it happens consciously, I just think that's what happens.
Yeah.
Like, hey, that memory in time and space needs some expression. You know? And so beings get put together to have all these parts. They're like, I don't know where I got all this from. But I speak Japanese. I'm like, why am I so attracted to that dang culture? You know? You look at my chart, and you look from my astrocartography over Japan, and it's like, what? Kelly's got, let's go to the map here. You can map your chart over the world.
Have you ever seen that?
Oh, no. That's yeah. So cool.
Welcome to astrocartography. It will blow your mind next. Next! why is this weird colors? Oh, I selected a map with weird colors. Oh, yeah. Bright colors. Okay, so, like, notice in Japan, right here, I've got all these memories of being Japanese and blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I'm tapping into the cultural memory that just lives within the planet, or whether I actually have these experiences. But look, the planet Saturn, the planet of karma, goes right over Japan. On my midheaven. So if I had been born in Japan, Saturn would have been on my 10th house, because my midheaven, top of the chart. So basically what astrocartography shows you is, hey, you got these provinces on the planet, and you can tap into them. Like, for instance, if we just look at North America, I was, I was born in Mississippi, Jackson, right here. And it turns out I have a Pluto on the midheaven line there. See that? See the Pluto line right here?
and they say to the right of the line is where you're still integrating things. The left of the line is better because you're in the angular house. But anyway, to the right of the line, so I was in between these lines. And I almost died a couple of times. See, here's Jackson right here. And there's Pluto line right near there. And as a kid, I almost died a couple of times. I ran into a snake in the woods, and it scared me. And I turned, and I hit my eye on a nail sticking out of a tree. And this right eye still has a scar deep down. Every time I get an eye exam, they're like, hey, there's a scar on your cornea. And I'm like, yeah, the snake scared the shit out of me. It's when I was five, and I ran into a tree. And then I read about Norse mythology and people that have strong mercury in their chart, and they're like, in order to gain wisdom, you must give up the sight of one eye. And I'm like, read about all these mythic characters who like had an eye injury of some form, and then they gained more wisdom for it. And I imagine, you know, like I was wearing a patch over my right eye for 2 years, year and a half. And I'm seeing the whole world through my left eye, which is connected to the right brain. I'm like, hey, no wonder I'm a poet. I was totally working on my right brain for 2 years, you know. Plus, I was role-playing. Like, I was a little pirate running around. Swashbuckling, you know? And so anyway, when I go to Colorado, you know, over here, I go right to this. I mean, right in Boulder. Here's Boulder. My Jupiter Neptune, which is the power center of my chart, is right here in Boulder. So I have Mars near there too. So athletics, philosophy, imagination, role playing games, fantasy writing, poetry, meditation, everything just exploded here on these lines. And when I'm here, I just feel like I'm in heaven. When I'm in Boulder, it's like Nirvana. I'm just walking around, like, wow, look at that mountain. It's so great. Like, most people feel that in Boulder, but I'm like, I go there and meditate and get visions from that mountain. You know, I'm like, wow. So it's like really connected in.
Can we look at ours?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I was just like,
what's mine?
Really, really interesting.
But wait, one more lesson.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Why are you going to Africa? I felt you over there burning in your boots. You're like, what lines are going through Ghana?
Yeah.
But check this out. One more lesson first. So, when it came time to do my calling, I met a girl in college. My first wife. We went traveling the world, backpacks. And we ended up in her home, which was in Key West, Florida. This is where I became an astrologer. Look at Key West. Uranus on the midheaven. Right through there. So in other words, I went to the point, the one point on the planet where my midheaven, I have Uranus in the 10th house, natally. It's like 10 degrees removed. So my midheaven goes right to it within 1 degree. So it's like activates that energy. And suddenly I'm like, the island astrologer. I'm 21-year-old, making 36,000 a year, doing charts, doing what I love. So people are like, wow.
What's that, Venus?
And Venus is there. Guess what? I got married from a lady who was from Key West, Florida. Yeah. But we also split up in Key West, Florida. Look at Venus and Uranus. Uranus, trauma, revolution, authenticity. I was like, you know, I don't feel like I'm living my life living in your land. I was like, I need to get back to Boulder. I used to live on that island and dream about being in Boulder. I was like, where's the mountain? If this island just had a mountain right here, I'd be happy. But I just felt like not homesick, but just mountain sick. You know? So where did I go? I looked at my astrocartography and I said, hey, maybe if I move up the line to Asheville, North Carolina, where's the individual states? I will be back in some mountains, but still be on that line. So I just went right up here, right there. So right there, I'm still on the line, just like Key West right here, to the left of it, which is supposed to be great for the calling. Because you're in the 10th house side of the line, not the 9th house, which is stronger, angular. And I was there. Okay, so let's see here. We need whose chart we need? Katie, when do you see Ghana?
Wait, can you see transits as well?
There are transits in astrocartography, yes.
Dude.
I know, dude. But man, learn the basics first. Learn how to interpret the moon sign before you go here. So I just tell students, like, everybody always runs to the new shiny things.
Yeah.
And they don't even know how to interpret the freaking 7 basic letters of the chart. Anyway, that's my rant for the day. Katie. Okay, so here's your deal. Where were you born at?
I was born in Phoenix.
Phoenix, right here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because Chiron's on your midheaven. You're a healer, born of Phoenix. Chiron's on your midheaven saying, I'm here to fix the world, heal the world, be the guide. So like if you went out to San Francisco, you'd have Mars on your midheaven. It'd be really great for being in charge of a great business, but you know, it'd also bring Mars stuff to the focus, you know? Sexuality, Mars, drive, determination. So you'd be like in your Mars power out there. And if you weren't using Mars in a positive way, you'd be like,
why is everybody attacking me here?
Portland.
Yeah, just think the West Coast is your Mars and your Neptune. Like, if you ever go to the West Coast, you might have very martial experiences. Like, I have Saturn going through my descendant there. So I have very Saturn in the descendant. It's very lonely and isolated. And I feel like, what? I mean, San Francisco is like a lonely, nice place. But everybody has a different take on things. But anyway, when you go to the world, it's like, we are the world. We're in Africa. But we got a whole pile just for Africa.
It's West Africa.
We'll just do Africa and zoom in. Okay. This one?
It's in that area. It's on the west coast, on the bottom list. There doesn't seem to be. Oh, it's right there.
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing is right through the middle of Ghana is the sun is on your IC. So that whole airy sun that you have, it's like, I'm here to fight a battle. I'm here to do a war. I'm here to motivate. I'm here to be a pioneer. I'm a trailblazing. That is going to be coming down at the bottom of your chart there. So the nadir, you know the bottom of the chart? This is the chart. It's down here. So what the sun on the IC is good for, we'll just read the text here. Your home life and family relationships, this is the fourth house, will flourish in this environment. Therefore, this is the ideal place to put down roots, to begin a family, or perhaps to retire. If you're ready to make a commitment to focus more on your family or your house, then this is the location. You may find yourself drawn to purchasing or renovating a house in the vicinity of this line. This is your chance to live in a home that truly reflects your personal taste. If you do not plan to renovate, then you would be well advised to choose a home that suits your need because you are likely to be spending more time around the house, perhaps even entertaining more at home than you have in the past. You may also enjoy opportunities to reflect on your own private wishes and ambitions. For instance, opportunities arise for you to finally pursue a dreamed about hobby or pastime. Extra hours at home could be used to good advantage. You would do well to avoid this line if you want to further your career or promote yourself in the public eye. You could attend a conference, but may not succeed in teaching or lecturing at a public event. You may enjoy working from home, but on the whole, this line is more conducive to private rather than public pastime because it's the sun illuminating the deep fourth house of family home roots. Mm-hmm. If it's in the 10th house, it would be reversed. You're like, this is perfect for career because you're going to shine. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is perfect for domesticating because you're going to shine. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
And does that, so fourth house, I mean, it's around like family, like domestic life and home. Is it also around like creating a family?
Yeah.
And like,
well, the fifth house is about procreation, okay, in that sense, but yeah, fourth house is nesting instinct, you know, the travel instinct to like nest and be focused and have your core, psychic core tapped into somewhere, you know. But look at this too, you got Venus on the IC, love. Your home and relationships take a focal role in your life along this line. If you move to this vicinity, you will be keen to incorporate beauty, pleasure, and artistic pastimes into your home and your relationships. You'll feel an urge to ensure that your home is a peaceful and harmonious refuge for you and your loved ones. Therefore, home entertaining and redecorating become important. In fact, your home may become a hive of social activity, because Venus loves social activity, with you playing the pivotal role. When your Leo moon is like, I'm the queen of my home. You may also have a party with Libra rising. You may also find yourself starting artistic or creative activities in your home. There you go. This line is ideal for either setting up a home or planning an enjoyable holiday. Holidaying along this line will bring artistic, enjoyable pastimes, possibly in the company of women or artists. However, you may also enjoy having a romantic holiday for two in this location. In fact, the line can also be ideal if you're planning to purchase a home for vacation. She drops her pencil. Loved ones, you need only to be careful not to overindulge. You know.
You're turning red again.
Really?
So basically what these lines are doing, they're saying, like, had you been born on the Earth right there, that planet would have been right there in your chart. And therefore, that planet, that place on the Earth acts as like a province that contains that energy, that energetic vibration. So just by going there, you're just having that happen.
And how many other places around the globe have this sun IC?
None. This is the only place right here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you go 180 degrees around the globe, all the way up opposite from Africa, that would be it on the minute. See here, if you went all the way around the world, check it out right here. See that line going through here?
Yeah.
All this IC activity is going on down in here in Africa. So it's all about like roots, home, family.
Is there any place that'd be really good for me to travel?
Well, every place is good to travel.
I know, but like that would,
like where you need to go?
Yeah, just another interesting
place. If you went out here to the Pacific Ocean, in the middle of the ocean, no, I'm just kidding. Here we go, we got New Zealand. New Zealand would be the opposite experience of Ghana. Speaking the same planets, Sun, Venus. So like, if you and your partner were like, hey, we love this, we're going to take a trip, let's go to New Zealand. Yeah. Suddenly your Sun, Venus would be at the top of the chart, and you would be experiencing all this traction in the public and vocation, you know, things like that. Those are just the vertical lines are when they're on the midheaven and the IC. These little dotted lines are the IC. The dark lines are the midheaven. Remember, there's the West Coast Mars line on your midheaven. So, if you went to the West Coast in San Francisco, the whole area, Mars is on your midheaven. So it would really be challenging in some way. In some ways, kick your ass. And other times, it motivates you, and you'd be like, "Wow, I'm a total Aries here." Wow, you know. So you'd be feeling like really empowered there. But you'd definitely face some challenges because, you know, dry disconnection, forming distinction. You know, good old Mars. But yeah. Oops. Let's see next chart.
Yeah, I'm gonna look at I'm gonna look at like California and Boulder. We're just gonna see
what your dealio is here.
Hey, can I say one more thing before we switch? But it doesn't have to do with the mass. It more has to do with the Mercury in Taurus. It's really concerning me.
Did you have the mind of the bull?
Yeah, because like when you said cow brain, I was like,
cow brain. No. Cows throughout the world cultures have been very respected. They've started religions, you know.
They're slow.
Yeah, but they're like the dwarves in Lord of the Rings and fantasy. They're strong. Like a cow has always been the symbol of a bull's strength, you know, and gold and wealth and material. You know, just like King Midas turning people to gold. You know, you got people that have a Taurus strong have natural sense of abundance and wealth and resources. My mom's a Taurus, and I always say, "You Tauruses are so into the earth." She'd be like, "I don't got no money." Like, a Taurus with no money? What about that money you're hiding in your bedroom? No, I'm just kidding. They always got money somewhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you want to look at what? Taurus?
Andrew wanted to look at his. I was just concerned about my brain. Yeah. Mind.
Don't be concerned.
I was like, I have cow brain. That's really awesome.
It just means you have a nice, slow, appreciative, take your time way of learning things. And then later, like most people learn things fast, and you're kind of like behind a little bit, but then when you catch up, you keep retention of it. They might not.
Yeah, you know? I like that image of the four stomachs.
Yeah, just think of your brain having four stomachs.
Four stomachs.
So like,
I feel like I have to like really digest things to understand it. Like I'm really having
a process. That's what I'm talking about. You just have a slower processor. It doesn't mean you're dumb. It just means that you're actually really sensual about feeling the information, like really texturizing it. Like making it form, you know, so you can like, so words can be very more sensual, more earthy, more grounded, more practical, you know.
That makes me feel better.
But I'm looking at Mercury in your midheaven. Not to go to Hawaii, you got Mercury in your midheaven. If you want a career in communications, go to the middle of the Pacific Ocean. No, I'm just kidding. Take a boat. These lines are powerful when you cross them. Like, whenever I'm coming across America, whenever I'm going through the panhandle of Oklahoma, that whole area, that was America, I'm always very cognizant about my driving and very careful because I have my Mars line going right through there. And several times across the country I've come across, there's been like a disaster. One time I was coming across Texas and I got to Oklahoma, down I-40 or whatever, and suddenly, out of nowhere, this giant thunderstorm comes. I was just like, "Hi, Mars." But I actually appreciate it because I was in New Mexico and I was in Arizona and it was so dry.
Oh, yeah.
I was like driving fast to get out of the dry. Like I wanted to get to North Carolina as fast as I could. I was like, it's so dry. I've been here for 2 weeks. I felt like a fish out of water. I got to get out of this. I was like running from the dryness. And when that storm came in and then it started snowing,
I was at my head ultimately going, thank you.
Catch a snow. Arizona's brutal.
It is. I don't know how people live there. Prescott's up high.
Wait, can I see what I have over in Asia?
You have less stuff in Asia. Asia.
Like, more like the Cambodia area.
Cambodia. Right here?
Is there anything significant?
Yes, you have Pluto and the Descendant there. If you want to end the relationship, go there.
That's exactly what happened to you.
Yeah, Pluto's the death, planet of death and rebirth, and it's on your Descendant relationships. So yeah. If you go there, it's going to peak in you. Intense transformation and rebirth of relationship. But all your Sun, Venus, Mercury stuff comes right to the Ascendant up in northern India, Bangladesh, Nepal. So this is a really good area for being the full light of your sun.
In India?
As soon as you go down to Thailand, start eating that spicy Thai food, you're like, my relationship's on the death row.
Yeah, so funny.
So anyway, let's look at Andrew. Here's Andrew in Asia. Like, he's got different stuff going through Asia. He's got Uranus on his ascendant. He's like, I can go to Asia and shock people. And Saturn and Neptune, deep spirits of the way. You'd go to Asia and find like mentors. You'd go diving in Malaysia off the coast and meet some like wise mentor guide. You know, so you got guidance, Saturn, Neptune. But anyway, you want to look at the map of America.
Yeah.
See what I tell you? People get sidetracked. Mm-hmm. This is good stuff, but you know. It's,
oh shit! I have some boulder stuff.
Oh yeah, baby. Boulder stuff. What you got? Mm. Oh, Saturn the Descendant. Loneliness.
It's Boulder. Oh, man.
Yeah, you're like, I'm in Boulder, Colorado. How can it be so damn lonely? That's like me in San Francisco, you know? And facing intense issues of karma and boundaries in relationships, you know? Oh. You feel that?
Yeah.
Like, I got boundaries.
But look at Jupiter. Been that. Chronos over me in Boulder.
Yeah. Yeah, but look at Jupiter on your ascendant. Because I have Jupiter on my ascendant in Boulder, and I'm like, I feel like nirvana. Because Jupiter on the ascendant is like, you feel like a living expression, like a paragon of Jupiter, Zeus, you know, philosophy, inspiration. So this is your T-square working itself out. This is your T-square opposition working itself out in Boulder. So while the Saturn's there, you also have the Jupiter. So it's a mix of the melancholia and the inspiration.
Yeah, which, yeah, and that's like the only reason I've stayed here, you know, because I have that expansion, feelings of expansion.
But here's the thing. Like, if you really want to look at a chart, well, first of all, I could do an interpretation and click Boulder, and it gives me like a text of all the different factors. So right away, you know, with Saturn it says, if you're ready for a serious relationship, like a personal business, then this location is beneficial. However, if you want lighthearted connections only, then you would do well to avoid connections with this place. Mm. Here you experience rewarding bonds with other people only if you're willing to commit to the relationship. In other words, a potential marriage or business partnership matures slowly over a period of time, but social connections tend to suffer from restrictions. You have the ability to develop long-lasting and meaningful bonds with loved ones and business associates. But the key word is responsibility. You're required to take on a more serious approach to your associations. Relationship can be rewarding in this location, but you need to be careful to ensure that your sense of duty is complemented by a sense of joy. You may find it more difficult to feel warmth in your close personal relationships. Your lesson on this line is to be prudent and wise in relationships, rather than falling prey to pessimism and controlling behavior. On the whole, business relationships tend to flourish more easily and readily than personal on this location. But look at Jupiter. Joy abounds here! So it's the total opposite, right? So you get this mix of these two. You feel free to express yourself as never before. That's how I felt growing up here. My parents brought me here from deep south Mississippi where I was dying, getting poked in the eye by snakes. And suddenly I went from, it is as if all limitations have lifted and you can follow your heartfelt dreams and wishes. Perhaps someone close to your heart enters your life in this vicinity. My first love, Andrew. A potential marriage partner or benefactor. Either way, this location is highly beneficial for your happiness and welfare. If you want to expand your world and throw yourself into the limelight, then this is the land to follow. Your newfound self-confidence and friendliness will become obvious to others and therefore attract goodwill in return. This is a particularly good line if you're wanting to teach. Or preach to others. Preach it to y'all right now. What up? Or if you are want to take center stage in any way. Self-promotion comes easily along this line. Publishing, perhaps even self-publishing, may be an option. I'm writing my epic work right now. The ancient astrologers believed the planet Jupiter to be highly favorable. However, there are some pitfalls to traverse in this line, like overconfidence, overindulgence. You need to be wary of overindulgence, see? Both physically and emotionally. Watch your weight. You also need to make sure that you keep your ego in check. However, on the whole, you're able to achieve your highest aspirations with the help of others on this line. So it's a good line to be on, because you're like experiencing both the melancholy of Saturn. You're working out your T-squared thing through ideas, Mercury, through intelligence, writing, learning.
And this is, I came here when when Pluto really started to transit through the T-square, particularly through Saturn. Or just, it hit Saturn like 2011.
Well, if you want resolution, you can go to where Mercury's on your IC, the bottom of your chart. Where's Mercury on your IC? Let's see. Mars.
Right through Atlanta.
Yep, right through Atlanta. Yeah, right here. Oh, dude, right through Asheville, North Carolina.
You go to Charleston.
You got to go to Asheville, North Carolina.
Columbus.
I spent 10 years there. You would love it. You would love it. You know why? Because the mountains there, they're like goddess mountains. They're like these old feminine vibe mountains. Boulder is very masculine. Mm-hmm. Like mountain climbers and everybody's running in athletics.
Yeah.
Over there, it's more like this old river flowing through, called the French Broad River. Mm-hmm. And it's like the oldest mountain in the world next to the Ural Mountains in Russia. And you just feel like this ancient connection to the goddess. It's like, whoa, these mountains are... And Asheville's like Boulder. Very progressive city, right in the mountains. It's not on the edge of the mountains. We have one... Boulder's very extreme. It's like nothing and everything.
Yeah.
And there you're just surrounded by these mountains. They're more like hills to us, not Rocky Mountains. They're just like these lush, pristine hills with all these like rainforesty kind of forests, you know, deciduous. Mm-hmm. Totally different trails everywhere. But they're like all like, you know, all these different varieties of trees, not just like pine trees and aspen trees. And like, wow, oh my gosh, there's 100 trees right here. So it's just real lush, you know.
And that's the Appalachian area?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought about doing the Appalachian Trail.
You should.
Yeah.
But that, but the particular place, see Asheville right here. Dude, that goes right through there.
Yeah.
You need resolution. Go to T-square. Go from Boulder to Asheville. And this is like, he's traveling his configuration. He's got that Boulder is tension of opposites here, and then you go down to Asheville, and you get to bring that Mercury, which is normally in your fifth house, but you're bringing it to the fourth house here. You're bringing it to the heart of things. Mm-hmm. And here it says, when you traverse this line, you're likely to an eventful home life. The doorbell's always ringing, the telephone's in constant use, and any computer networks are lively. It's ideal if you're seeking to set up a business in your house or want more stimulation in your house. It is also perfect if you're attending a conference or educational workshop. A busy home and family life with a strong emphasis on communications with family members will play a key role. Your home becomes the social meeting house for family and friends. Any kind of meeting held in your home will be successful. This is also an ideal line if you're keen to study from home or to research your family history. It's also possible you're constantly in communication with a member of your family who resides at this location. Whatever the exact scenario, mobility rather than security is the flavor of the day. So be moving around in the community. Therefore, you need to be flexible and adaptable in order to make the most of the opportunities that arise from any connection to this location.
Yeah, I've had fantasies of doing the Appalachian Trail, just like backpacking for like weeks.
Yeah.
Through like that area.
Yeah, it goes right through there.
It goes through
Asheville, goes through Boone, North Carolina, which is a beautiful town too. It's like, Boone's like a little Boulder. It's like Boulder scaled down like 10 times. This little mountain town with this university, Appalachian State University.
Anything in Kansas City?
Kansas City!
Go out there and
nothing there. I'm just kidding. I can tell you that before you can get there. Let's see here. Map. But the psychic textures of your chart will be mapped over there somehow. Especially if you're drawn somewhere. If you're drawn somewhere, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I was drawn down to the Yucatan during Pluto crossing my ascendant, and it was conjunct my Venus and squaring my ascendant, and I was supposed to go there, but I kept feeling these feelings like I'm gonna die if I go there, and it kept getting more intense as the day came to go,
And I was like, I'm not going. I was like, I'm not ready to die by death by scorpion bite or whatever. I was just like, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to do this inwardly. I've got to go somewhere. Because it just felt like I kept having dreams and getting visions, and I was like, these kind of visions don't come to me normally. I got to trust this. So everything just told me that gut feeling, don't go. But when you felt called to go somewhere, you're like, But I looked at Yucatan, and the Pluto line went right through to where I was going. Pluto, I'm in heaven. It's like, Yeah. The planet of death, right over the place I'm going to. I know. And everything was like, don't go.
It's a tendency.
Yeah, can I see? All right, where's Kansas City? Somewhere around here. Oh, over here. Oh, Chiron on your ascendant. Dude, it's a great place to go for any kind of learning, healing activities, conferences, workshops, healing the body.
Yeah, Spencer.
Oh, because Chiron's all about healing, and there's the healer going right through there. I mean, you can't get much closer than that. Look at that.
Before we go into Gale, can I say that I have a boulder? Sorry. Just the boulder's lost, so you can see.
She got fascinated about these maps.
I love it.
Yeah, coming out of your cell.
I need to know where I need to go.
My friend Moses Sirigar, he's an astrologer from Prescott.
Really?
Yeah. And he lives down there, and this is his expertise, is Astrogator Tiger. So if you ever want to have Astrogator Tiger reading, go to Moses Sirigar. What are we looking at?
Call it Boulder. It's the Colorado.
Oh. Is this your chart? No, this is his. Dude! You're on your Jupiter-Saturn line, just like I'm on my Jupiter line. If you go over to Grand Junction, you'll have weird relationships. You're right on the descendant, going down through the four quarters. How do you get closer to the four quarters than that?
Yeah,
four
quarters.
Go stand on the four quarters and I'm in a relationship with an alien. You look up and be like, there it is. The beam comes out. You should go to the four quarters and stand there and tone Uranus in your meditation through them. And some guy tackles you off the line and says, you've been on there for too long. I want to stand on there. Chart of... So the only line... Oh, you got Uranus on the IC here in Colorado, which is Uranus at the bottom of the chart, which makes for unpredictable living situations.
Yeah.
An unexpected turn of events may bring about your discovery of this location. You're like, Boulder, cool. Perhaps you have a sudden job offer, which requires relocation, or perhaps a change of travel plans. As you hear, whatever the reason, you are unlikely to feel settled in this vicinity for long, and therefore you are unlikely to stay here for an extended period. In other words, this location is ideal for brief visits rather than for setting up a permanent home. It is an ideal line if you are planning a lifestyle that involves a detachment from the responsibilities of home and family. Whereas Ghana is like all about home and family. If this is the case, you will benefit from a feeling of personal freedom that will spark inner realizations. You may even join an unusual commune. If you do want to settle in this vicinity, then you would be wise to choose an unusual home or remind yourself to expect the unexpected. Traditional home and family affairs will be disrupted along this line. Therefore, if you are searching for a stable home environment, then avoid this line. Because Uranus is about metaphysics and community and, you may encounter difficulties with sudden and strange happenings or simply electrical problems in your home. It's also likely that while you're on this line, your own family will view you as the odd one out. That weirdo went to Boulder and went to Naropa. No. In short, this location is beneficial if you delight in your own individuality, but causes problems if you're seeking a more traditional role. So there you go. Anywhere in this line. And you're on the right side, so this is the third house side. So it's great for learning and education right here.
Yeah.
This is the third house line side of the nadir, the bottom of the chart.
Cool.
So what's Gail doing here? Oh, Jupiter on the descendant. Relationships with foreigners. So Jupiter, planet of philosophy and foreign travel and exploration is in the seventh house there. And this is the sixth house side, because you're on the right. So it's good for devotion and mentoring and serving and learning skills and gaining expertise in a craft. So yeah, it's a perfect place to be doing any studies of craft, especially with Jupiter, the planet of philosophy. multiculturalism. Venus on the ascendant here, so Venus is on the ascendant right through Grand Junction area, so it's like you become the embodiment of Aphrodite, the goddess of love. That could be dangerous in both. Yeah. And it's on the right side too, which is, this is the 12th house side in the line. So it's like issues of like mysticism and confusion, ranging from mystical union with love to, that was confusing. You know, you experienced some of that? Because this side is a supposedly weaker side of the line because it's a Kagan house. But, so yeah.
Where is a good place to like settle and build like a home?
Oh, anywhere. well, like you said, that sun on the nadir was pretty interesting, right? So we go. It won't be in Ghana, though. It'll be somewhere else for you.
That's Ghana. Hang
out. I don't want to go to Ghana. Definitely not attracted to Ghana.
Everybody's attracted to something.
I feel really attracted to Texas, actually, for some reason.
Well, look, right here. I was just going to say, Mercury, Houston, Pluto, Austin, Mercury and Pluto in the Senate. So that stuff that you got in the 8th house, the gift of research and detection and going down into the psyche and being a speaker for the dead, you'd be an amazing psychologist, therapist right there in Texas.
I keep, like, getting this hit to go to Austin.
Yeah, me too. The other day I was thinking about that. We should all go. Because I was thinking about, like, having a migratory lifestyle. Because me and Chad were thinking, like, we should just walk around, like, St. Francis and talk to astrology about everybody we meet. And I said, well, yeah, what happens when it gets cold? And I was thinking the other day about that, and I was like,
Go to Austin.
That'll be warm down there. Mm-hmm. And so, because it's pretty progressive. And I got some friends there, musicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guy who used to live in my room.
Oh, look, you'll be to the left of the line, which is the strength of the line. The guy who lived in your room used to live in
that. Yeah, and he would just tell all these stories about how awesome it is. Mm.
Yeah, I've been hearing the same thing. I'm like, in Texas? Come on, I can't believe it.
I know.
And I'm just like, whatever. But, yeah. But yeah, Houston, Austin, anywhere to the left of these lines is great. So yeah, anywhere along here.
What does she have through Phoenix? She has some stuff there.
This is Jupiter on the descendant that goes through Colorado and through this is New Mexico. So through Albuquerque, you got Jupiter on the descendant. Hmm. But that goes around all over, you know, south. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, if you're looking for like what she's got with the sun and the icy. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say she comes back from God, like, it's a perfect home. And you're like, I want that. So you're like, where does that go for me? So you look around the world and you say, let's look. I like the spherical world. It's like, let's center the globe on the U.S. Okay. This is how it actually looks, you know. There's a line going through Texas. Right there.
Uh-huh.
But now I can't see every line. Let me go back to
South America. Or is it right?
Or something? I'm gonna go back to the other map because I can't see the whole world. I'm like, I want to see the whole world in my screen. The whole world in his screen. Alright, so sun on the IC. Like, here you got sun in the midheaven. So that means 180 degrees later. Right here.
Australia.
Adelaide! Cool. Melbourne! Australia! I went backpacking through Australia. With a girl I met in Boulder from college, we got married, we went traveling around the road, we went back, we got all the way up the coast, all the way through. On a long journey, camping.
That's good.
There's
something, that's probably where I was born.
Where?
That's, I'm like curious about Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a bunch, like, kind of.
Yeah, that's where you're born, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to look like your chart. Look, there's Uranus on the midheaven, see? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you went over there, you could be doing some cool astrology. I have a friend of Maurice Fernandez who does astrology from Israel. Mm. He was an Israel Boulder connection. He lived in Boulder for years.
Wow.
Yeah. He's born the same year as me, 71. So we both like are up and coming next generation astrologers. They call us the next generation. Like, whatever, we're like 40 now, you know? And like, but we got into it when we were 20 because we were just like way into it. I got to it when I was 14, you know? Mm. And so this guy's like me, but he's from Israel. And he always goes down to Africa, too. He's always about saving the white lions. And he had this whole, like, cancer rising healer thing going on. Mm. Yeah. So this, you would just be like your natal chart if you were there.
Yeah.
All the capacities in the chart.
Uh-huh.
You say. But the main thing about relocation charts and locality is that you can't just look at the place. You can't just look at the... wait, how do I get out of this? I want to get out of this. I just want to get out of... Oh, here we go. So, like, basically, when you look at a relocation chart, like, let's say, check out Andrew. We go Andrew, we go chart, we go locality. We come over here, we say Boulder, Colorado, relocated. So, you're going to see, like, right away, there's the Jupiter rising, there's the Saturn. Those lines are just showing these two points being peaked. But there's other points that peak in Boulder. This is called a relocation chart. Because I've taken your chart and you said, hey, what if you're born in Boulder? What would it look like? Mm-hmm. And this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rule is, if there's a planet within 1 degree of a cusp, it becomes really important. And if anything's angular. And look, your moon's angular too. So the moon's nearby. So it's pretty close to that midheaven. So what is the moon in Pisces about? The soul of a mystic, the poet, the visionary artist, in the field of vocation. So it's a great place to come for vocations involving healing and imagery. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, here I am. And then other things.
Pretty close.
South node is pretty close. Yeah, 2 degrees. See that? So, and the north node is pretty close. So the ninth house has to do with higher education. The north node is about destiny. So you were destined along this axis to experience higher education if you came in. Hey, let's sign up for classes. I need to learn something. You know? And the same thing down here. South node in the third house would be like having deja vu in your conversations. Like, have we had this conversation before? So you walk around Boulder and be like, this reflects the past. You know? So you can get caught in past life sort of ego struggles around issues. But for the most part, it's right there. If you're born in 89, I just realized your axis is the same as my axis. We are connected. Because my north node is 24 Aquarius. And we have the same nodes. Hey, look, north node, 24 Aquarius.
Yeah.
Oh, but we're opposite?
Or no, we're the same. Oh, north node Aquarius. Because it's a 19 year cycle. So you're born in 89, I'm 71, so we're 19 years.
Wow.
So basically, when you have the north node in Aquarius, your goal is to like get over yourself and do something for humanity. Because you're a born performer, a king, you know, Leo.
Yeah.
But this lifetime is about getting over that and doing something for humanity. Like Elvis and Einstein were both born with the north node in Aquarius. Elvis stayed true to what he was in terms of the south node. He already mastered performance and became known as the king. Mm-hmm. Leo grabbed the heart, died of a heart attack, drug overdose. So I'm king, you know, died on the throne, actually. So the thing is, Elvis did some humanitarian activities and definitely shocked the world. It's not like he didn't live his north node. He definitely shocked the world and with his crazy style of music and everything. But for Elvis, the whole accident was about me, Elvis, I'm Elvis. And he was really invested in that, to the point where he was fighting with his manager over money and blah, blah, and contracts. And when you see some of these stories, and you're like, wow. He was really into being Elvis, you know. But when you look at the north node in Aquarius, it's like, wow, Einstein played the violin. He was creative. But he said, you know what? He became known as Aquarius, the scientist, the person who brought a paradigm shift to modern science, relativity. You know, this guy was like seen as more like the humanitarian who's doing pacifist peace work for 10 years, his last 10 years of life. Working against the atomic bomb that they created with these theories, you know, it's like, we don't need that. Because they blew up Japan, and Japan was his favorite place to lecture, and he's like, I love Japan! You know, think for Japanese women, I read a biography, he was like, when they blew up Japan with the atomic bomb, it was just so sad. You know, poor Einstein. But, yeah, so of course, oh, Israel, after the first, when Israel became a state again in 48, whatever, and the first guy died, they wanted a new, first leader, the first president, they wanted a new president, and Einstein was world famous and Jewish, and they said, Einstein, how would you like to lead our nation?
Oh, he would have probably been a great president.
He would have, but yeah. Guess what? He said to him, he said, a scholar belongs in his study.
Wow.
Yeah, because he understood implicitly, without even knowing astrology really, that South Node Leo, you're a natural leader, you're a natural radiant figure, but to make it about you and being the center is not the path.
Yeah.
So he said, I will stay true to my guns. Because he had the moon in Sagittarius, which is the soul of the scholar. And talk about staying true to his path. He stayed in his study because his moon here was in the sixth house. So he has the soul of a scholar in the sixth house of devotion. He's like, a scholar belongs in his study. See, there's that Uranus in the third house like you got, Chad. I see the world in really unusual ways. I mean, Einstein would walk around imagining what it would look like to ride on a light ray and discovering relativity. Everything's relative. There's perception here. You know, time and space bend with your perception and your speed and your physics.
He's got so much Aries.
Yeah, see, there's his North Node Aquarius. See, North Node Aquarius. Because he has a pioneering mind.
Yeah.
And his Mercury was conjunct Saturn. So very wise, organized, structured mind. A lot of people that have Mercury-Saturn aspects are really good at abstract, higher mathematics. Because they understand the deep mathematical structures that underlie reality. When you have Mercury and Saturn in Aries, you're like, I'm going to pioneer a mathematics. When he developed tensor calculus, which is like 20 years of calculus, like imagine calculus 1, calculus 2, calculus 3. When you get to calculus 20, that's like what Einstein created. It's called tensor calculus. I studied at University of Colorado, and I was in a graduate course in relativity. And like one symbol in a page of symbols symbolizes like 10 pages of other symbols. You're like, what? You know? And it's like, damn, Mercury, because when I saw that Mercury took Saturn, I was like, no wonder, you know? And I have Mercury and Capricorn, Saturn sign, so I'm very organized in my brain, and I'm able to like pump out books like this in my 20s, you know? But like, I'm more of the poet and the visionary, you know, in terms of like the artist stuff, you know? More like you with the imagination, you know? But Einstein was like that too. He said, imagination is more important than knowledge. Look at that sun in Pisces in the 10th house. He got paid to be a professional dreamer. I am a professional 10th house dreamer, Pisces.
So would it be, because my north node is in Pisces, so what is that telling me about my Virgo and Pisces relationship?
That means that you're in trouble.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But we're all in trouble, so that's a good part. It's a joke. You're like, what does that mean? I said, that means we're in trouble. You're in trouble. I said, the good part is we're all in trouble. Just by being here, we're trying to work stuff out. Where is the display points? Oh, there's the nodes, yeah. Okay. Yeah, your sound is a Virgo. So you spend lifetimes putting abilities together in your master abilities consciousness and being able to organize anything and analyze things to death. But this lifetime, you're supposed to open to larger spiritual order and unified field. And open up to mysticism and spirituality and dreams and visions. Because, you know, the South of Virgo is about like service and being the servant and helping others and being, you know, dutiful and devoted to a craft. So, yeah, there's like craftsmanship. But your South is in a 12th house, so you come from lifetimes for being the dreamer. You're like a servant on a monastery in a past life. And now this lifetime, you're supposed to be a mystic in a job. So you got kind of a get out of jail free card because your north node is in the house that resonates with the south node. So it's, in other words, you're normally supposed to aim the gifts of the south node, like analytical abilities, the Virgo, toward the north node to open up to the great mystical unified fields of the great spirit, Pisces. So, but since the north node is in the house of Virgo, discrimination and discernment and breaking things down into parts, it's like you're looking for integration in the field of differentiation. So, like, get a free card. Yeah.
Cool.
Good
question.
Anyway, let's see here. We got, Gail has the, what's your nodal axis to be? There's yours. You got the north node in Aries. Yeah, we looked at that. Remember south node? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Spend lifetimes being in relationships this lifetime. I am me first, and then I'll be with you later. Mm-hmm. But first, I gotta be me.
So, those rule the signs. Oh, they're in there. They're in there.
Yeah, and you get this grand cross, too, which is like, you know, holding the weight, there's pressure, you gotta integrate. And the key is to integrate this opposition, mm-hmm. and then feel centered. Mm-hmm. So, the moon Mars, that's like Artemis, moon Mars. And you got a moon Mars opposition?
like Artemis was like the huntress. She was like the virgin goddess of the hunt. She hung out in the forest with a bunch of nymphs. Females. We were like, we're all virgins. We don't care about men. We're just going to roam around in the wild. So Artemis was like the wild woman of the wild. Whereas Athena was the lady of the city, the polis, the city, the metropolis. She was like civilization, crafts, you know. So Athena women are more like, you know, like that, goddess of crafts and wisdom and the warrior arts. Whereas this one's the huntress, Moon Mars, but it's like, there's an attunement to the wildness of nature, you know.
I mean, I
just
wrote my whole thesis on that.
Oh, really? So,
yeah.
On Artemis?
No, on the wildness of nature.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Your thesis is helping you work out your internal tension so that you can arrive at a place of synthesis. And in the Uranus Chiron is about alternative healing. Because you got Uranus and Chiron saying, like, man, if I could take some philosophy of wildness and then bring it together with some alternative healing, help people with some acupuncture needles and get some hot stone massage and rah, you have nature and wildness and healing all at once, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the key to working out this whole thing.
Cool. I'm on the right track.
Yes, that's good. And you're going to be a teacher because Sagittarius at the top of the chart shows in your house of calling, you're here to disseminate, teach. Hmm. And Jupiter tells you more. Jupiter says, oh, in the second house, nature, you're a teacher of nature. Hmm. But in a very Aries pioneering way. A pioneering nature teacher. So what new thing could you teach about nature? Oh. How can you integrate it with metaphysics, astrology, spirituality, Gaia, earth, Irish medicine?
I think I'm going to write a book.
Yeah. I think so too. I mean, with that busy Mercury in the 8th house, you got to do something with it or it'll get you in trouble. You know? Mercury in the 8th house of secrets and death and rebirth. It's like, it's like alchemy in the 8th house. Transformation. And Mercury loves it there. It's like, ooh, I can put this with this and make this. You know? So, like, your mind is very busy with this alchemical transformation.
So you're saying Mars and Virgo, would that also be a good writing?
Yeah, and the herbalist. Virgo's the herbalist. You know, it's always about devotion to craft. And Mars and Virgo, yeah, because of the Mercury, yeah. It would bring wisdom to the writing. Because, you know, the practical, pragmatic wisdom. How can I use this? Not just head knowledge. Mars and Virgo's like, how do we use this? Mm. How is this practical? So, you know, it works. Mm. Anyway, cool. Let's do it. So I'll put this, I'm writing books too. Books are awesome. I'll put this on the web so you guys can have a memory of it.
Cool.
As long as the camera didn't die. The camera die? No, we're good.
What's in it?